far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode,
it's Halloween and I'm drunk. And we're going to talk about Devilman, the live-action movie.
Channel 81 on your FM dial, and I want you just to take your head and turn the volume real, real loud. I don't want to have to beat you up. 1, 2, 3.
Is it a pick up?
Yeah, it's picking it up. Sweet.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't know what happened to you, so I was working on my comparative essay that's due like Thursday. No, I was doing my thing about Mad Max, and I was just working on like citing stuff since it's got to be in the APA format.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, well, if it's taking me away from talking about this crappy movie, then like that can't be all that bad.
Yeah, this is a step down from the other three Halloween episodes we just did. Previous
yeah,
years.
This is a huge disappointment.
How long had you been sitting on the... Is this recording?
Yeah, it's recording now.
Okay, cool. So yeah, how long had you been sitting on this DVD? You said you got it at like a thrift shop a few years ago?
Okay, so I got this movie from some Indian dude and his girlfriend fiance that had like big boobs at some little like DVD crappy rack in a ghetto mall near the airport in Atlanta. So this might have been like 6-7 years ago. And I bought it because I was like, hey, this might be something I want to check out eventually. And then I never did. Until last night.
Uh-huh.
There is a reason why I never willingly wanted to see this.
Good to not check it out.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, it's
better to just keep it on the rack.
Yeah. What's interesting is the fact that this movie was featured in New Type USA as like, hey, this is coming out. And I got one of those issues. I don't know if I can find it anywhere, but I remember like seeing about it, you know, and then I think I came across it again. I was like, oh, cool. I forgot they did a live action Devilman. And then I, of course, totally forgot about it. And then now, you know, I buy this movie and I'm like, and we watch it and I'm like, oh man, this was terrible.
Had you ever heard anything positive about it? I mean, I thought it kind of looked for a reputation of sucking.
You know, honestly, I have not heard anything positive about it, at least to the best of my knowledge. Okay. So.
It's kind of like a forgotten thing now. Like, I hadn't heard about it in years. Like,
oh,
I don't think it was really all that memorable to people. And clearly we won't remember it next year when we are reviewing whatever.
It makes me be like, we should have just put the effort into just talking about the TV series in this movie. So
yeah,
I'm on.
Maybe we should have watched that Cyborg 009 versus Devilman on Netflix.
Yeah, that would be totally worth our time. Okay, so I'm looking at the ANN entry for this, and okay, so the version that we watched. There's a lot of, I guess you're moving stuff around?
Yeah.
Alright. So the version
This should stop now.
Okay, the version that we watched was, it's interesting because, like, usually DVDs, I mean, mine was a freaking bootleg, so, like, obviously, like, you know, that's where, it came from where it came from. And I was like, oh, maybe there's, like, a different track. And there's, like, according to the list of like switching over in MK or MPC or Media Player Classic, it gave me like 30 options to change to the same dub track. There was no Japanese track on that. Not on the bootleg that I've got.
Oh.
So, I'm looking at the dub cast. Oh, wait, no. There is no English class cast listed on this. I'm looking at a German cast. So, but it sounded like there was some notable people in there. And there's some voices that, like, it seems to be on, like, either Viz dubs or whatever. And I'm wanting to say that I'm wondering if it came from, like, Bang Zoom that did this dub or something. Because I'm not sure who originally put it out in English. It just says the ADR production came from Arvental Media Productions. And they got it was put under the Tokyo Shock, which means it was licensed by Media Blasters. Well, that actually explains some things. Let's see, this dubbing company, and I'm just hitting stuff. So this dubbing company did titles like Aiken. Let's see.
My connection dropped. You last thing I heard was you were saying there were 30 options for one one dub and another Japanese version.
Yeah, I said that like a minute ago. Yeah, because like apparently I guess there was only one track on this, and
right. No
subtitle track hardly. So Media Player Classic couldn't switch to a Japanese track that did not exist. So pretty much whoever made this DVD just like took it from the Media Blasters version and was like, no one's gonna watch this in Japanese. But no, the company that did this is Arvental Media Productions, and this was put out by Media Blasters. So, and their works includes, oh, let's see, Mazen Kaiser Skull OVA. They did ADR for that. Genma Wars, Aiken, Chromody High, the movie. I can't even say that name.
Movie?
Yeah, there was a Chromody High movie. Oh, it's live action. That's why they did it. No, apparently, they did ADR production for Rikkyo, the OVAs. I never even knew they got a dub. I'd rather talk about Rikkyo.
This must be like bottom of the barrel in terms of the budget for their dubs.
Yeah, but my thing was that there was some voice actors in it that actually sounded very familiar that would be like in a Viz anime or something.
Yeah, the girlfriend of the main character, I think it was Stephanie Sha, it sounded like the same voice she uses for like Hinata and Orihime and all the same voices that she does for pretty much all the characters she voices.
Yeah.
She turns into like some sort of angel or something at one point.
I better go ahead and pull up notes on this. I mean, it sounded like I think the character with like they got his fingers cut off, it sounded like Vic Minogna did him, but I mean, there's no way to tell without actually seeing a cast list on this.
Yeah, because
I mean, there was credits at the end, but there was credits at the end, but I just fast forward through because I just didn't care. But I think it's just like the Japanese credits just subtitle or like translated. That's
it. Oh yeah, yeah. When I watched the movie Kitaro, which was like a live action version of Gekiga no Kitaro, I had the same issue where I couldn't find online the voice cast.
Yeah,
I had to just guess based on how the voices sounded. So like, it took me a while to figure out some of them, but like, I think the eyeball was the voice of Krillin, and then. So I figured out it was Sunny Strait just based on how it sounded. And
yeah.
Like the cat girl, I think it sounded like Bulma, the Dragon Ball Kai version. So I figured out Maka Rial. And Kichiro, it sounded like Natsu from Fairy Tales. So I figured it was Todd Papercorn. But it's like, there's no actual list on the DVD. When it goes into the credits, it's just a bunch of untranslated Japanese. Yeah. So you don't even know who the Japanese actors are, let alone the English ones. I guess they're like, it's just a dub on a live action movie. No one cares who the actors are. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you would think that they would have like some union that would require them to be credited for the work or something, even on a live action.
Unless I just looked at it and be like, oh man, you cannot be credited for this piece of garbage.
Yeah, maybe they're like, we want the money, but we don't really want the same thought on our reputation.
Did you take any notes on this? Because I came to the point where I just got to the point where I just kind of stopped caring after a while.
I mean, but there's so much. Like, I tried to remember some of it, but the main stuff that stuck out to me was like the black guy that was the TV announcer.
Yep, Bob Sapp, Japanese own black man celebrity in Japan, living at
three
large.
Three faces and transformed into a demon.
Yeah,
that was the highlight of the movie. And other than that, the whole thing is kind of like forgettable.
Yeah. Yeah, one of his quotes was, because I took this down, where he's just like, global war has begun. Isn't this fun, everyone?
Yeah, and then he says growing faces as I said.
Yeah. No, like, I knew about Bob Sapp from, apparently, like, I saw some candy commercials he did, like, many years ago that were on YouTube that were discovered, at least to me, by the guys who used to do One Pixel Jump. And they put it on their old website, which I think is just, like, archived at this point. And, well, basically, like, I went on there and I saw these commercials. I was like, oh, Bob, this guy's kind of cool. And then I saw some other videos of him where he'd be, like, around Japanese girls, and they, like, all want him. Like, they just, like, love Bob Sapp for some reason. I actually want to get to talking about Bob Sapp, but probably after this review, because he's got an interesting backstory.
You were saying he's in, like, commercials there and stuff?
Yeah, they put him on, like, some Japanese, like, samurai show or whatever I saw on YouTube. I'm putting all this stuff in show notes so people can see it. But he'll crash through the wall.
Forget about the movie.
The what?
Let's just talk about Bob Sapp. Forget about the movie. You
yeah. So, you know, that's, I guess I'm doing that now. But, so anyways, like, he would be on this reality show and he picked up one of the Japanese, like, actors as a joke or whatever. But the camera panned him and he's so big that the actor's head is going above the top of the stage that they're on, so you get to see all the lights from overhead in the shot, because it's just him lifting it up to the sky. And they're like, oh, please, Mr. Like Sapp, put him down.
Yeah. It must be 6 or 7 feet tall or something.
Yeah, alright, let's just talk about Bob Sapp, because screw this movie, we'll have to get to it eventually. So according to Wikipedia...
Where is he from?
Okay, according to Wikipedia page, he's an American professional wrestler, actor, comedian, and former American football player. And did kickboxing and mixed martial arts. So that's pretty much like anything with like some sort of martial arts in Japan. If you're a foreigner, like you seem to get more publicity there than say like the standard like Japanese people. But like this is more Daryl Surratt territory, knowing like who's popular by what reason. So according to stats, Bob Sapp is 6'5" and weighs 329 pounds. And he's in the super heavyweight division, which I didn't even know you can go past heavyweight. That's insane. But basically, his football career basically consisted of him being on the Minnesota Vikings for 2 seasons. He's only played 1 game in his entire career. And apparently, according to Wikipedia, there was the fact that he was under a steroid abuse like scandal. So that's why like he kind of got sort of like kicked out of the NFL, it seems. And there was a point where he was in poverty and worked at a funeral home. And then eventually he got into professional wrestling and NWA and joined the Japanese pro circuit. And that's kind of how he got to be very popular. But he's been in a bunch of movies, which I was surprised he was in this stuff. So like, let's see, he was in the movie Elektra, which I've never seen and never will.
I've seen it, that's not worth seeing.
Yeah, that's why. He was in the Adam Sandler Longest Yard movie. He was in the recent Conan the Barbarian remake. I didn't even notice like a big black, well there's a lot of black, big, at least big people in Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah, I've seen Elektra and Conan, but I don't remember him being in
Yeah, neither,
one.
I mean,
must
I don't.
Have been just like a goon or something, not yeah. a major character.
Well, I looked him up in Conan, and basically his role was as a character. I can't even pull it. Oh, well. Here it is. So he's listed as Ukafa, a leader of Kushite tribesmen from the savannas of Kush and Zim's lieutenant. Whatever that means.
Yeah, I don't know who that character is offhand.
Yeah, I
that movie was kind of just like Conan fights some people. It's kind of cool.
No, that's exactly what I forgot the actor's name. Yeah, that's exactly the Jason Momoa Conan the Barbarian movie, was just Conan just killing people like crazy and beating the crap out of them and getting some booty on the side.
I mean, it had, like, some nice sets and some nice action, and so, like, I can't really complain about it, because you don't really expect much of a plot from that kind of movie. But it's not like it left a huge impression on me.
Yeah, I still have a fond memory of the original Conan movie. Man, damn, I don't want to talk about Devilman, but I guess so. So speaking of movies, you should get back on topic, John.
Yeah,
Halloween,
okay, so
we gotta stick to the theme of Devilman, no matter how crappy this is.
What does this start off with? It's like some kids sitting around a fireplace talking about devils or something, right?
I don't even remember that. All I got on the notes was the fact it was like they're at school, and then you got Rio and the main guy, Akira, and Akira sucks at everything. He's a wuss. Rio is really strong. And then Akira gets picked on. And, like, one of the guys that's the bullies was just, like, his quote was, like, yeah, without Rio, he's just a pussy, you know, he can't do anything. And he gets beaten up for it. And then he tells one of the bullies, like, something about how, like, you really don't want to mess with Rio. And then it goes into a backstory, which amazes me, on how Rio comes into a classroom to pick on the last person to pick down Akira. And chopped his fingers off with those giant scissors used for lawn care.
Yeah, that seems probably the best of the movie.
Like, did he and just get, like, where did he get it from to, like, bring it in school without nobody questioning him at all?
I love how they were like, the teacher, he was just so shocked, he just stood there and he didn't do anything.
Yeah,
like, this guy didn't get kicked out of school. He just
continues
to go there.
Worst.
And no one cared.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, like, it's always this common thing in anime and Japanese films where the teacher is the most worthless person in these situations. And I kind of, like, I don't know how accurate that is. Because, like, I'm thinking, like, a teacher is going to stand in and do something right, like most of them should. Not just stand by like, oh, I'm so terrified. And, you know, like, freaking, like, I understand, like, you know, what's there in the classroom but, like, maybe a metal ruler to put up a fight against Shears. But, I mean, you gotta do something to, like, try to keep some calm and peace in your classroom of a student that doesn't get expelled. But the other crazy thing about this is the fact that Akira sees this, punches Rio in the face telling him to stop, grabs the dude's fingers and sticks it back in place!
Yeah, and he holds it there until, like, the doctors get there and sew them back on.
Yeah, I was
and then
like,
the guy's got fingers on back in
like,
the movie.
Oh, it would have been
like, little stitches.
It would have been funny if they just like, well, I appreciate Akira's help, except he messed up my index finger, my middle finger. So then it just goes to his hand, and it's like the index finger's super long, and the middle finger's the same as his ring finger.
Yeah, or they're like on backwards. Or
yeah,
something, or
fingernails are showing like we're like if he closes. the fingernails are touching the inside of the palm. It's like, well, I understand,
Halloween
like, this isn't medical school, but
yeah,
he did his best. Oh, man. But it's just like, yeah, like, Rio doesn't get expelled or anything. They're just like, yeah, it's the kid that doesn't shouldn't be messed with. And I guess maybe he's rich, so probably that's why he's not, you know, getting expelled. I don't know.
And he also likes Satan, so he can, like, maybe he can mind control people or something.
You know, yeah,
them,
that's
like, obey him.
Yeah, that's probably it, because, spoiler alert, like, we're not spoiling this enough so that nobody goes and sees this. But, yeah, basically, like, Rio's Satan. So I guess Satan has influence on people around him to, like, use telepathy or whatever to make sure he doesn't get expelled from this school.
Yeah. It cracks me up how whenever he mentions Satan, his friend is always like, Satan? Question mark?
Yeah.
Like every single time the name is mentioned.
What's a Satan?
Like, huh?
You? Satan? Nah.
And it takes him like an hour and a half to figure out that's who he is.
It took him the whole freaking movie to be like, wait a sec! You are Satan!
Like, he didn't notice anything when he was, like, jumping around with a machine gun, falling people down.
Oh,
whatever,
no.
You know?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, no. We'll get to that in a minute. Anyways, so
or when he cut off the fingers or like all the number of crazy things he did, he was just like, "This seems like a normal guy to me."
Yeah. Well, no. So like they have a scene where apparently like so Kira is staying with the girl or whatever her name is in her family, which he considers his
Mickey, right?
Yeah, Mickey and her family. And they've been living there for a while, and so, of course, him and Mickey have a romance going on, and...
Who is she? Like, why did she take him in?
I think they're, like, childhood friends or something, and they felt bad after Akira's parents died, and the film just kind of, like, my parents died, and this family took me in, and it's been pretty cool since then. Okay.
I guess they're, like, engaged, because I think at one point they have sex.
I think you don't have to be engaged to have sex, John.
Well, I mean, it is
in today's
Japan, you know?
Current politically correctness. Yeah. Well,
I think they're a little more like, you know, they tend to like in anime at least they're always like, oh, this has to be the one true love or whatever, or else it's wrong.
I
won't be ready.
I mean, they did talk about like getting married and having kids, but that's sort of like a thing where it's like they kind of already established the romance there, and you know, like couples even before they get married like talk about that stuff depending on like what kind of couple and how far the relationship is. And I think it was just like in terms of like it was more of a wouldn't it be nice kind of speech or scene, and instead of like being
play
solid,
the Beach Boys, wouldn't it be nice? And after you mentioned that, wouldn't it be nice if we were married?
I'm usually the song guy. I like how you stepped up there. I'm proud of you, John. You're learning from me. That you're catching on.
We would have to sing it together, though.
I know. But the thing is, I'm not a big Beach Boys fan, so I don't know the song too well. I just know, wouldn't you be I know the song.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay, so going back to the movie, there's that part where, like, a girl's being pummeled by volleyballs, and then Mika, like, pummels him back, and she's like, you need to stand up for yourself. You're on your own, bye. And then it cuts to a scene where it's like, so apparently Ryo or whatever, like, gets, cause he drives like this Fiat car convertible or whatever. It's not even that cool of a car, but anyway, so he like shows up. He's just like, Akira, you gotta come in. We're gonna go back to my house. I gotta show you something. So then, in order to give exposition of what happened to his father, Ryo gives Akira the alpha version of the PlayStation VR to put on his head in order for his dad to talk to him about what he discovered instead of Ryo telling Akira what happened.
I guess for 2004, this seemed pretty high tech.
Yeah, they're bigger than the freaking HTC Vibe or whatever. I mean, after one of those things, they're like slim in the front, but this one's just like, they just look, dumb. You know, 12 years later from a movie, and you're like, wow, that's just bad.
I guess it's not as bad as a Virtual Boy.
You know, they're about the same, to be honest. Well, this would be better than the Virtual Boy, because at least it could stay on your head without you having to duct tape it to your skull.
And it wasn't all red and everything.
Yeah, like, it was like white.
The Virtual Boy, you can't see colors other than red.
Yeah. But, So anyways, they go back to Ryo's pad, and he explains that his dad is being possessed by a demon, which in order to illustrate this, he opens up the closet in his dad's lab, and it's just red, gooish crap everywhere, kind of like the Xeno or the Alien Hive in the Aliens movie where they go to the reactor, except it's all red. And his dad's got this huge face, and he's being possessed by a demon, and he's just kind of groaning in pain. And that's pretty much it. So then he has to explain, like, yeah, this is some serious stuff going on. So then, this is when we get to see how Akira becomes Devil Man. When, brace yourself, John, Satan's sperm cell shoots out of the possessed closet into Akira to possess him as Devil Man. Which that didn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, this definitely doesn't measure up to like how he becomes Devilman OVAs or anything. It was just like,
yeah, no, this
just
was
gonna happen.
This was hella dumb because it's like, I guess like Satan possesses people by jerking off the porn or whatever. So if his sperm cell hits you, you basically become one of his. Obviously, that's the way I understand it. He just freaking jerks off a sperm cell in Akira's face. And I mean, it's a freaking giant sperm cell. I mean, like, there's no other way to say that it's not when you look at it. Yeah, so then he becomes Devilman, and then
the seed of evil gets in him.
Yeah, but then he fights like his dad, which turns into a red blob monster of some kind. No, wait, no. So Kira is a sucky Devilman. He can't do anything.
He's always losing.
Yes, I think he only beat up like 3 people in this movie, and the rest of the time he got his butt whooped. Because then Akira is Bishi Angel Wing Boy, aka Satan, and he's the one that defeats his dad instead of Akira, and he's just like, it's okay, Akira, like, you'll get him next time. And it's like, no, he won't. That's not what's going to happen. And then I guess it just goes on with school, and then Akira, like, gets into a fight with the bullies, and then he's able to do crazy wire foo backflips on them, and they can't touch him. And, man, I don't even know where I'm on these notes.
Isn't there some bird lady that shows up, or is that afterwards?
Well, what happens is the fact that there's a scene where we like to call Japanese NIV, because Japanese NIV is a neat that lives in his room with a bunch of glow-in-the-dark stickers and, like, 20 television monitors and records Mika across the street and jerks off to her, basically. So,
yeah,
because you could tell Japanese Niv is like a mid-20s man that looks into a camera across the street all the time.
This is what Niv is doing now that we've kicked him out of the chat.
Yeah, this is probably what he's doing in South Carolina. So if you happen to see a person that is in, I guess, like, the upstate of South Carolina, if he's still there, I don't even know anymore. Like, looking in your window right with now, a giant camcorder across the street, that is going to be him, and you need to report him to the proper authorities.
Women of Gaffney, beware.
Yeah. I believe he's in Gaffney. It's the only... Anyways, but... I censored out his real name in the last episode, so no one... I guess it's in a way protecting him, but let's just...
Mm-hmm.
We're just calling him Japanese Niv, so... So anyways, it's Akira gets a bike, his Tran motorcycle thing, and him and Mika go on motorcycle rides. And then the bird girl shows up at Akira's window one night, and they start talking, and then she fights him and kicks his butt. Him and Ryu, after the fight, go out and get ice cream. It's kind of like, hey, bro, it's okay, you lost your second fight in a row as Devil Man. Here's some ice cream that'll make you feel better at some bar in the middle of Japan or whatever. And then it gets to a scene where, like, he's making out with Miki and questioning about who he is. And
she's like, this doesn't seem like you. And he says, is this making you feel awkward? She's like, no. And then it goes on.
Bounce, go, well.
Yeah, I'm sure that must have seemed pretty racy for, like, a Japanese movie, but it's pretty,
yeah,
pretty tame for
they
an
have
American
clothes
list.
Making out on the bed. That's nothing.
Yeah.
But then, John, we get introduced to Bob Sapp as the newsman. And I don't know if they overdubbed his voice or not in this movie. I would think they kept it the same.
They got the Japanese subtitles on it.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, I think he spoke in English, obviously.
Right, yeah.
And in the movie. Like, it just seemed like what he was saying was not matching up with his lips the entire time. And I don't know if it was someone overdubbing him or just the audio track on this bootleg DVD I have is just that crappy and the syncing.
It's probably a bootleg problem, yeah.
That's a good way to blame it, yeah. But, yeah, this is like one of these dubs that, like, the lips didn't really match up entirely with people.
Yeah, it was awful.
I mean, like, I barely...
made it even worse.
I barely visually paid attention to this thing, like, half the time. So, well, then we get... So after Bob Sapp, newsman extraordinaire, we get introduced to the turtle monster from the second OVA that winds up eating the the guy with the cut off fingers. And no, what's funny?
Oh yeah, that scene. There's like some guy at the like in a market in the street or something.
Yeah,
and he's like, turtles are tasty. Or he's got some really horrible like acting and dialogue. Yeah. And then he starts, like, eating people, and it's just awful in general, but especially that scene.
He's like, turtles are nutritious, kids, and he, like, shoves the kid out of the way and, like, bites the turtle's head off and, like, eats the whole thing.
Yeah, and I found it here in the chat. He says, turtles are great, delicious. See? They can be eaten like this.
So cut-off fingers guy gets absorbed into the turtle monster. And this is where the logic of the movie is so stupid. So apparently, turtle monster is having rhetorical arguments of what murder is with Devil Man. Where turtle guy is like, I don't murder people, I only eat humans. That doesn't mean it's murder. Or he's like, I don't kill them, I eat them. And I'm like, what the fuck? Yes, it does.
Oh, yeah, this was kind of like the OVAs where they were, like, talking about, like, the humans need a predator, too, as part of the food chain or whatever.
Yeah. This is, like, one of the first fights Akira wins is when he punches that guy in the face that's, like, one part of the turtle shell. And it winds up killing the turtle guy, which was, like, not even that much of a fight. You can probably throw a baseball at the turtle guy and he'd still die. But hey,
yeah,
Devil Man was self-destructing. Devil Man reminds me of that episode, the issue with Paris, of Pokemon.
Oh, the problem with Paris.
Yeah, we're like they like go into these mock battles to make Paris feel better about himself so he can fight. And that's what I think the purpose of the turtle monster was like. Oh man, Devil Man can't. He's got to save us somehow. But like, I got to boost him up. So like, I'm just gonna make this one part of my back the softest thing. And hopefully that'll be my self-destruct kill switch button that we'll be at.
Yeah, it's like Ekans or coughing or something. It's like the turtle. It's like that weak of a monster.
Yeah. And then they go to a scene where... So people start turning into demons in this. And then there's a scene where the girl that was being picked on, like she wound up dropping out of school or something. And then she goes to talk to Mika in like programming class or whatever. Because it's just like a bunch of computers. And they make this throwaway line of like, save your file in something dot, you know, HTML or whatever. And I'm like, oh, are they doing like web design class? I don't know what this is.
Yeah,
it's
like index.html.
Yeah, index.html. And
yeah,
so
it's like, that's like the course I took in 2011 where they were using like a textbook that from the early 2000s where it's like telling you how to design a page that can be viewed in Netscape and like how to make a quick time file embed on there. And
yeah.
Stuff. It's like they're teaching some sort of rudimentary web design on there.
Well, I mean, I took web design over the summer, so it's actually, HTML-wise, it's like the easiest of programming. Like, anybody can pick it up and do it. I actually had fun doing that, but
something I need to take again with, like, a more modern textbook, you know?
When I got to effing jQuery and, like, my PHP admin, that's when I was like, I can't do any of this crap. This is retarded.
Mm-hmm.
So... But anyways,
I guess there's something to be said for that web 1.0 simplicity. Like TuneRadio is still basically designed like the web 1.0 website.
Yeah, it hasn't moved since the GeoCities days of like the mid-90s. But
there's something to,
you know, God be told, really that thing is sort of stable when Basic can pay for the hosting.
It's supposed to come back this week, but we'll see.
Yeah. I don't know, just throw in some CSS and you're good to go. So then, like, the girl comes back to talk to Mika, and then the girls that picked on this girl, who's now a demon, like, it looked like there's something about the Japanese women and picking on girls where they want to have lesbian sex with them to humiliate them. Yeah.
She comes in and she's, like, got a different uniform on. And they're all, like, bullying her.
It wasn't even a uniform. It's a green jean jacket and, like, this makeup hippie dress. That's all she's got on. And they're like, you're not even in uniform. We'll take your clothes off. That'll teach you.
And, like, where is the teacher? Like, you know, there's no teachers in any of the school scenes in this. They just let students run wild.
Was this, like, an adjunct teacher that's just like, all right, 5 o'clock, save your crap. I am... gone.
Maybe the teacher is Japanese NIV and he's just like watching and he's like aroused.
I thought it was a woman that was teaching this class. It sounded like the voice of a woman.
Well,
I mean, but it could be that too. It's just like, oh, I should not put a stop to this at all. It'll resolve itself. If I see penetration, just keep going.
Doesn't someone come in and save her?
Yeah, Mika does. But no. But the thing is that this new demon girl, like, she's able to shoot some green stuff out, and then it causes, like, the mock globe to melt or something. And then all the girls get freaked out and leave. And then...
Yeah, and then this is the start of, like, everybody's freaking out about demons, and they're having, like, demon witch hunts, because it's like, oh, demons are everywhere. And that stuff goes on for a long time. Like, that's where it started to feel like this is... does not need to be 2 hours long.
Yeah, the problem with this movie, the main problem, is that it's a two-hour movie, and it should have been an hour. No, it should have been, like, 45 minutes, if that. Like, 30 minutes in, John, I was like, oh my god, I'm done with this. Like, this is this drug for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. It was so slow-paced. Slow. And
yeah, it really was too long.
Yeah. Like, if it was, like, an hour, then it would have been like, okay, that's a successful climax. But if you're trying to go for an hour and a half, or, like, at least an hour and a half, like, you've got to keep it, like, the pace interactive. At least do more with the fights, but I guess they couldn't just, like, put the more money into the fight budget or CGI budget at the time. I don't know, man.
I mean, it's 2004, so it's, like, it's going to be dated animation, but, like, the CGI was really not impressive enough to make up for the slow pacing.
Yeah, it was dated back then for its time, too. And this is, like, a big, like, block, like, a budget movie for Japan.
Right, and, like, compare that to the 2004 CGI we had in the U.S., like, Finding Nemo or whatever, you know? That doesn't look that much worse than Finding Dory, which I saw recently. But, you know, this looks way worse than 2016 CGI.
Oh, gosh, yes. I honestly want to say that, like, PlayStation 1 CGI cutscenes look better than this movie.
They probably are.
That is a harsh comparison on my end. Like, that is a punch to the gut on the CGI team or whoever worked on this. It's like, you know, I could just pop in a cutscene from, like, the MD. I can pop in a tape from CPM, Central Park Media, look at the CGI MD Geist logo guy, and say that's better CGI than Devilman. And that came out in the 90s.
Yeah.
Explain yourself!
Media Blaster's not doing good on competing with CPM by putting this out.
Well, they only distributed it. They didn't. They're just like, I guess people will buy this. It'll make us some money.
Yeah. It's weird because I think usually Media Blasters has, like, a New York dub, but this I think it's a L.A. But I guess they have both.
But, so I guess you could say this is the part of the movie where maybe it starts, quote, picking up when demons start going out of control. They had, like, Bob Sapp does it, the thing where, like, in L.A. there was demon attacks, and then there's, like, a guy in a cowboy hat in a parking garage shooting down police officers with a shotgun.
This is like how Japan thinks of the U.S.
Yeah, well, it's like, okay, a redneck shooting people down with a shotgun in L.A., that's just a Friday news recap on the news that we could call for terrorism. That's not really a demon attack.
And then he shows, like, a scene where there's some guy, like, buying a gun, and he's like, I'm going to use this to fight off the demons, and then he starts, like, shooting it in the shop, and they're like, don't do that in here!
Oh! No, yeah, the best part was, like, when they had, like, the guy on, like, in a wheelchair, like, I need a gun! I need a gun! And there's a guy that is reluctantly, like, oh, I just so happen to set up this table of guns in the middle of the street. Please, come buy some guns for me. And then the guy picks up a freaking Uzi, and he's just like, this will protect me from the demons! Are you a demon? And he starts waving at the people, like, no, I'm here to get my gun! I mean, I guess they're like, is that how Americans buy guns? I'm like, well, it's actually a bit more civil at the open markets at gun shows, to be honest. Like, at gun shows, you check in your gun at the front. So, or you don't even bring it in, period. Because then you're just there to purchase, and you can get ammo, but you can't load anything because there's, you know. But you don't really need a lot of police at a gun show, because a lot of honest Republican rednecks, if something goes down, you've got, like, 900 of them in. Of them putting bullets in the same guy. So, really, a gun show is about the safest place you could be in case something happens.
Yeah.
You just hide under a table and don't move and wait until the shooting stops. So, anyways, you can hide under the table with Nazi memorabilia, which is also shown at these gun shows, according to the South Carolina one I went to back in the spring. That was interesting.
The Donald Trump table.
The guy had a Donald Trump sign next to his German Nazi memorabilia.
Yeah, I thought that was the case.
Yeah, I was like, man, the irony of this. And the Ted Cruz table was like the opposite side of the gun show.
Yeah. That's going to be someone on BuzzFeed or something is going to find our podcast thing and be like, look, more connections between Trump and Nazis.
One co-host that went to a gun show and is just reporting the facts as he saw them, because that is exactly what happened. But I will say that guy was also selling World War II stuff, so gun collectors are like history buffs. I mean, I'm a huge history buff, so like it was cool seeing like M1 Grands that someone's refurbished and is trying to sell. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's cool to own those guns, but it's just kind of a matter of like, well, I don't really like the Nazi stuff.
Yeah.
Now, I remember talking to a guy that was selling like reprints of like the Iron Crosses, like the Nazi stuff, and he's like, oh, this is a reprint for like people who are like doing like mock World War II battles or something. And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure. I even asked him about white supremacists. He's like, well, maybe I get those. I don't really know. I'm like, yeah, right.
That's South Carolina. Of course, there's going to be some of those.
Yeah. Anyways. Oh, this freaking movie. Okay. So, demons go on a rampage. Yeah. There was a scene where Devilman kills more people. Where it's two demons. One has, like, a bat, and the other one has, like, a medieval sword just hacking up people. And then it gets to a scene where, like, the kid, and he's got that mom that's like crazy or whatever, and it's like the other demon girl that's friends with Mickey is talking to this kid, and he's just like, my mom's changed a lot. And his mom comes down and she's like, your dad's home, everything's okay. And he's just like, yay. And then his dad finds out his dad's a demon because his eyes won't stop turning in circles.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just kind of goes to the kid screaming while the girl is just like leaving the apartment community. It's like, well, that's not good. And then it goes to the point where, okay, so there's a witch hunt going on because of this. And they have a anti-demon brigade, which they go by the name Demon Busters. So
like walking around with flashlights and stuff. And
yeah, dressed in white with a pentagram and a cross in the middle of it. Because those two things perfectly work along with each other.
Yeah.
Symbolically somehow. But the Demon Busters,
I think it's like Evangelion where they're just like passing in everything that they can think of relating to the Bible or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, Christianity is still considered an exotic religion in Japan.
Right, and they just wanted to make it seem foreign.
Yeah.
That's probably what they put in the scene with the LA as well, and the black guy is the newscaster.
Yeah. They're like, we can reach a global market. I hope you don't.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess they got it released here, but I don't know if this thing was exactly.
Yeah, no one talked about it. No one really reviewed it. No one said anything good about it. So obviously,
if
it did not.
If you look on
Rotten
Tomatoes, there's only fan reviews. There's no critical reviews. Like normal critics didn't pick up on this at all.
Okay, didn't you say Rotten Tomatoes, like the fan reviews, was like 42% or something?
Yeah, like 42% give it a positive, but it was like they were mostly like borderline, like 2 stars, 3 stars. So it's like, you know, even the positive ones were not very positive. They were like slightly positive.
It's probably going to be reviews of like, well, I could have liked this movie more if da 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 X Y Z. It's like no, the movie was effects. Yeah. Like if the movie sucked, don't try to justify how it was at least halfway decent. To try to make yourself look cool for sort of liking it.
Yeah, I guess maybe like if you're a hardcore Devilman fan, you like that it. They made, like, a movie out of it, but it's like they could have done much better.
Yeah, I mean, like, even the hardcore Devilman fans, whoever they are out there, they're going to be like, they should be respectively like, no one should see this movie. So anyway, it's like there's the demon witch hunts going on, and then, like, the uncle, like, is at work, and then, like, they accuse somebody, turns somebody else in for, like, a freaking, to get ahead of him in a promotion or something.
Oh, right. Yeah, and he's, like, laughing at him. Like,
yeah.
Because he gets pulled away, and it's, like, nobody notices that this guy obviously turned in somebody who hadn't done anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, the whole plot is just silly. It's like the Salem witch trials now, where they're, like, people that they have a personal grudge against, they're just turning them in, and they're getting, you know, in trouble when they haven't done anything and everything. And so it's, and then they're like people being hidden in houses, and then that part kind of reminded me of like the Holocaust or whatever with Anne Frank and that sort of thing, like hiding out people under your floorboards or whatever and trying to keep them away from the lynch mob. And
well, I mean, it gets to the point where like, you've got people that like are demons that are police officers that are just shooting humans, and people that are not considered demons. Which basically, in the beginning of the movie or towards the beginning, like there's something mentioned about how how Satan wants to, or I think Rio basically says how Satan, which he's talking about himself, like wants to rid humanity, like all together and let the demons rule or whatever, and. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a way, this is his plan of, like, it happening by causing this hysteria of getting people killed, like, because there's this, like, whole demon panic thing happening. So, here's, so then
people
it gets
against each other and stuff, and wipe them all out.
But, no, this is the part we get to, like, one of the scenes where I've called, like, automatic bullcrap on and how retarded it is, was the fact, I think they go back to Rio's house, and there's a newscast there. Because there's a bunch of people in this giant mansion that have, like, put themselves inside that they're accusing to be demons. And yet, I think they were or something. I don't know. But it's
there
the fact...
There's, like, this big fat guy that comes out and starts, like, yelling about
something. I think it's just a cult thing, but that's not the dumb part. So then Rio has, like, guns in his hand, and he's like, come on, Akira, we can take out all these humans. And Akira's like, no, we need to, like, save them. Because they're important. And then Akira's just like, whatever, screw you. So then, Rio, this reminds me of like the bullcrap, like something of the bullcrap that happened in like Dog Soldier or Soldiers of the Past, which is a movie, which is an anime we'll have to review eventually, where like there's a lot of like unnecessarily like moving and cool like backflips and stuff for, that serves no purpose to kill your enemies. So what Rio does, there's a lineup of the Demon Busters that are just mowing down people coming out of a house, which is like, wait, if you're being shot at, why are you running into the path of the bullets to escape the house? You're better off just staying in the house. Which that didn't make any sense.
The scene made no sense. Like,
no, it did!
Why are they in the house? Why are they coming out of the house?
It's a matter of fact of why are they coming out of the house in the line of bullets?
Yeah, like, why did they think that was a safe place to go when there's, like, all these police out there?
I don't know.
Like,
you tell me.
Nothing about it makes sense.
No. So Ryo decides to take both his semi-automatic weapons, turn them to the side in a kill shot gangsta mode. He walks behind and in between the lineup of these Demon Busters, walks right past them, just walks past them. And about,
they don't do anything.
They don't do anything. Yeah, they don't even do anything at all. But
nobody ever does anything with
you. So Rio, halfway walking past them, about a few feet, decides to do a roll. Just a combat roll out of nowhere. Like he was avoiding an attack, which nothing was happening to him. Does this cool looking, I'm a badass roll or whatever, and then pulls his guns out and headshots all the people in the line. And all they do is they sit there and watch this guy do a roll in front of them and shoot them in the head. And they have no problem shooting moving demons coming out of a house, but when someone walks right past you, literally rolls on the ground like an idiot, and then proceeds to shoot you a bunch of times, you do nothing.
I mean, I guess he's using his Satan powers or whatever to try to prevent them from doing anything.
I guess you could say that, but that's, I still call BS on that.
Yeah,
this is just called a stupid, bad movie.
Yeah.
You don't need Satan to prove that point.
He's responsible for this film.
Oh, gosh, that was just like, what is this BS? So then, Anyways, Demon Butler, so then Akira goes back home. They have the moody girl that turns into a demon, and the boy that she was trying to talk to at the swings, he's a demon too, or I think he's still human. I have no idea. But
I don't know why they spent so much time on that kid.
Yeah,
like,
the last half of it is just about them two. I'm like, they don't do anything. But
like, why did they need to bring in Miki's friend? Why did they need to bring in the kid? They don't really hit the main plot.
Dude, I don't know, but
like, that could have been removed, and the movie would have been like half as long, and it would have been better.
Yeah. I don't know if they're trying to go for that like Devilman's Brigade thing, like we saw in Amon, because it had the little kid in it with like the big eyeball, and like I mean it's the girl that's like that has these powers, like that she can turn into a fairy. Is she able to shoot acid out of her tits? We don't know. We never saw that part. That's gonna be a no, because if it wasn't in the movie, then it wasn't that girl.
Yeah, maybe this is stuff that's in the, like, the original manga or TV show or whatever, but it's like,
I don't know.
It didn't feel like it needed to be in the movie.
Oh, but anyways, so then, okay, so the Demon Busters go to their house after those two leave, and then like they're like trying to save each other, and then Akira's like, I'm really Devil Man, I'm a demon, take me, save them. Which, his sacrifice is for nothing, because then Japanese NIV, he's the one that snitched on them that they have demons in the house. He's really at fault, like the real NIV, for anything. And
everything.
Yeah, everything ever. So then he calls up this, he's trying to tell this mom not to kill this family because of something he started, and they don't listen to him. So they wind up killing the Akira's adopted family. And he winds up beheading the Mika, or they wind up beheading Mika once Devilman is resurrected from his freaking slaughter from the machine gun bullets of being crucified or whatever. And then he goes back home and sees that all this stuff has happened. And he basically takes Mika's head to the church that they were at before and places it on the altar to whatever significance that has.
That he cries for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, and then like it reminded me of when Uso's carrying his mom's head.
In Victory
Gundam. I was like, oh, this just became Victory Gundam, which this is still not as good. It can't redeem itself through that kind of plot point in this story right now.
Maybe they should have made a live action Victory Gundam instead.
Yeah, that's what it just should have turned into, and I would have liked this movie more. Because at least that would have made up for G-Savior as a live-action kind of movie.
Or maybe they would ruin it. Maybe they shouldn't do that.
Yeah, I shouldn't wish things. Okay, so then it gets to the point where Akira, the world's pretty much decimated and destroyed at this point. Three-headed Bob Sap is running around somewhere. And so then Ryo shows up at the church. And they start having some dialect where then Akira finally realizes an hour and 45 minutes into this movie that you must be Satan, or you've been Satan all along, haven't you? It's like,
yeah,
yes.
He just realizes it suddenly, and then they fight, and then, you know, that's like the big climax of the movie, and they're like destroying the earth, and
yeah,
that's when it gets more interesting, I guess.
Even the fight against Ryo, Akira still loses. He gets his body, like, kicked in half, and he's dying on the beach. And then Ryu is sad because it's like, I only, like, did this for you, for us to be the only people on this planet alive. And here you are dying, and what have I got to show for it but destroying humanity? You're like, exactly. And the CGI got really worse. I think I noted it as, like, this looked like something from, like, a crappy, like, Saturday morning cartoon CGI show. Actually, you know what? It's even worse. It's worse than VR Trooper special effects. Let's get real. Or, what was it? Samurai Superhuman Cyber Squad or whatever the heck that show is.
Yeah.
I've only seen the intro for, and that's all I ever need to know about that. Wasn't
yeah,
there, like,
the
teenage...
Rangers,
wasn't there, like, what was it? Cyber Teenage Fighters from Beverly Hills or some other crappy show?
Oh, I think it's the Teenage Tattooed Alien Fighters.
Yeah.
Hill.
Even that
yeah.
show had better production values than this crappy movie. Yeah, I think it's like, yeah, Teenage Tattooed Fighters from... Yeah. Oh, man. So
I think that's one of the like American attempts to make a Power Rangers knockoff.
I don't know. Something I'll never watch. But then they go.
It's available on DVD for like $1.
Yeah, it's like $5 on Amazon. Buy Teenage Tattoo Fighters from Beverly Hills.
That's how cheap they have to make it to make anyone buy that.
Yeah. That means I got to put show notes for the Amazon link for people to spend money. Wait, if they buy, if we set up like an Amazon, I think we have an Amazon affiliate thing. So if you buy Teenage Tattoo Fighters from Beverly Hills through our podcast affiliate link, that I've never bothered to set up, but I probably should do it in the next few days before this episode comes out. That means that money comes to us. So you'll be funding us by buying that crappy TV show.
Weren't we going to have a, like a Right Stuff affiliate thing? Did that go through?
I never even checked on it, to be honest. I think we got approved. We got approved, but I never went in there to do anything about it.
Yeah, well, maybe this is available on Right Stuff, this movie. Like, put a link in case anyone's crazy.
Okay, yeah. We'll sell this the Right Stuff. And if they don't have it, well, God bless you. So that's why we were spoiling this stupid movie, so no one has to watch it. But apparently the only people left on the planet is the fairy demon girl and the boy. And that's it. That's all. That's this movie. We just basically, we summarized this movie in half the time that we saw it. And that's all you need to know, which means this is as long as it should have been.
Yeah, not a very positive ending, I guess.
Well, none of the Devilman endings have been positive. That's kind of what makes a Devilman.
Yeah, exactly. This is not a very feel-good series to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of moral high standards, Devilman is not about that. But however, in terms of quality of production, Devilman should be about that, which is not this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, John, maybe next year we should look at Mazinger Z versus Devilman. That has to be better than this. Or eventually we'll have to get the Devilman TV series and watch all that and review it, or watch whatever we can. We're all going to watch it.
Right. Yeah, it's available on DVD from Discotheque.
It's still currently licensed, so that's much better use of your money than trying to ever pick this up. Honestly, yeah. I think I don't even remember what I paid for this, but I think I overspent than what I should have at that crappy dealer at the ghetto mall in Atlanta.
Didn't have a sticker on it still?
No, I didn't have a sticker on it. I think it was still sealed wrapped or something.
How can you tell it's bootleg? Is it like, you got Japanese text on it?
It's got Japanese and English text on it, and it's supposed to look like it's a Japanese DVD.
Uh-huh.
And I think they copied the Japanese DVD and just like reprinted it on some crappy paper and were like, hey, here's the Devilman movie. So really I funded some like Chinese syndicate by buying this off third or second hand from an Indian guy who buys it from the mob or something. Or from a market that uses their money to support the syndicates and the Chinese mafia in Hong Kong. So that's the dangers of buying bootlegs, is when, you know, you're obviously supporting some shady crap that's going on. However, it is much, much cheaper.
That's the advantage.
So yeah, that's the live-action Devilman movie. I hope this is the worst Devilman thing that they've ever made. As far as I can tell, yes. So we should be good to talk about more Devilman every Halloween.
Yeah, this should be the worst one that we've done, so hopefully in the future we review better stuff, but I'm sure it can't get much worse than this, can it?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, those crossover movies might be interesting. The one where he fights Cyborg 009 and the one where he fights... I think my thing cut out for a second
I did a cut out there for a second.
Yeah, well, anyway, I was saying both of the crossover movies are probably better than this.
Yeah. We might just do a double feature of Mazinger Z versus Devilman and the Cyborg 009. No, wait, wasn't there one recently where he fights Lupin?
Oh, I don't know. I remember there's, like, Conan versus Lupin.
That's... Okay, crap. I thought that was a recent Devilman one, or maybe that's... I don't know, man. But they do appear to make more Devilman So it's just kind of like, as long as we keep seeing this stuff, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
But no, that's basically it. I wanted to talk about Bob Sapp, and I did. So that people can see Bob Sapp. And I'll post up like whatever commercials I can find on YouTube, or at least the best ones, on show notes. He's also got he has his own album called It's Sapp Time. Hold on. And I think I listened to it a little bit on YouTube, and I was like, well, I think we got our ending song taken care of for this podcast, and I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So I guess for Devilman, we pretty much covered it here, and we can go on to the closing remarks, huh?
Yep. So let's go ahead and get through some closing remarks.
So I'll cover what's going on with Love That Goku.
Oh, nice.
So there was the incident where Britney Spears posted a picture of her son dressed up as Frieza. And here's what Love That Goku's take is on this cosplay. Frieza was a wicked man, responsible for billions of dead. Shame on your son and you as well. He's tweeting at Britney Spears. Are you aware that Frieza is responsible for the destruction of planet Namek? Are you aware that Frieza is responsible for the death of Dende, an innocent Namekian? American music singer Britney Spears has disrespected the Namekian race by allowing her boy to dress as Frieza, the tyrant destroyer of Namek. Namek Lives Matter.
Hashtag Namek Lives Matter. There you go. That's definitely going to be... I got to put this in this episode. It's probably going to be the header. That's a pretty good one. I thought she just had like two sons. So
yeah, I don't know which son it is, but there's like a picture that she posted and she just says it's her son.
Yeah, it's like, and it's a kid in a Frieza costume, like doing, like jumping in midair and they're catching it, and it's like the background of the California wasteland, and they got a pretty nice big deck to at least do these moves on. Like, I see this nice deck and there's nothing on it. It's like, well, I mean, you do keep making music, which makes you money, so.
Yeah. Josh was criticizing the eyes on the costume when he posted the picture, which do look kind of goofy if you zoom in a lot, but
is a homemade costume, so, like, at least give at least give it some props that, like, at least the kid tried to make his own Frieza costume. Yeah. And that gives it some uniqueness, so.
And then, after that, he goes on a rant about the Vampire Diaries. He says, Great Aunt Maylee and my sister will not allow me to watch Dragon Ball Z on the television because they are watching the Vampire Diaries. I unplugged the TV and told them, this show is a slog. We should watch Dragon Ball Z instead. The Vampire Diaries mythology is an incoherent mess. And furthermore, not a single character on there has got any idea what they're talking about. Imagine a single character from Vampire Diaries stepped up to Goku. I shudder at the mere thought. Dead vampire on aisle 2. Come clean it up. I told Great Aunt Maylee, what are you learning from this program? And she said, I think you should move into the shed. I told Great Aunt Maylee, I would gladly move into the shed if it meant I don't have to see her and my sister ever again. The winches. If only I could contact Dale, I would say, I'm moving to Beirut with you. Please send a car. Like, you can drive from Ecuador to Beirut.
That's a flying car. It's possible.
Yeah.
I thought he was already on a quest to get to Beirut, because he was just like, this GPS tell me there's no route. I'll make sure of that.
Yeah, that must have failed.
So wait. If he's living in the shed, how is he going to keep his capsule bedroom?
I don't know.
The spaceship bedroom. Yeah, like, how can he train in there if he's in the shed? He's not getting the
gravity. I
don't
think he's moved in there yet. Because he continued to tweet after and said, Goku would knock a Vampire Diaries vampires into the stratosphere, dare I say the mesosphere, at Vampire Diaries. Your show is shit. I throw the television into the hot tub. I told Great Aunt Maylee and my sister, you want to watch Vampire Diary? Go on ahead and jump on in. The water's fine. Put the strongest warrior from Vampire Diary, even the weakest Warrior against Dragon Ball Z and see what happens. I go so far as to say the portly weakling Yajirobe could pummel the best warrior on Vampire Diaries. Yajirobe of all people. I must announce that due to circumstances beyond my control, my life is extremely bad. This is not how life is supposed to be. I have one final thought on Vampire Diaries, and what I would like to say is fangs, but no fangs. Yeah. And then he says, with all the stress this month, I have barely begun to put together a Halloween costume. Don't want to spoil who it is, but he's from Dragon Ball Z.
I hope.
And then right after that, he says, rewatching the episode where Goku defeats King Piccolo. Unbelievable. Now that's why they call him Goku. Gee, I wonder who his favorite character from Dragon Ball Z is. Who he'd cosplay as.
Kenshiro.
Yusuke Hiramashi. And then he says, it would seem as if many of my followers have never had sex. And then he says, which candidate would send me to Beirut? At Donald Trump, at Hillary Clinton, which one of you will send me to Ecuador to live with my sister's ex-husband?
I think you're crap out of luck there.
Yeah, I don't think either one is concerned with that.
Yeah.
But if he wants to be deported, his best luck is probably Donald Trump.
Yeah. So I guess just go Trump there. Yeah, I haven't even checked poll. No one has anything been said about current poll numbers on who's ahead of who. Is Trump doing better?
No, not really. I mean, he's doing better in some of the polls, but it's like he's not really consistently ahead or anything. So
okay,
it still seems likely he's going to lose. But at the same time, there's all these new emails being leaked out all the time where it's saying like that the Democrats and Hillary's campaign were telling the polling organizations to like oversample Democrats, and they got like 10% more Democrats than Republicans in the polls. So that's why Hillary's ahead by 10%. And in like the early balloting in Florida, Trump is ahead. So it's like in terms of actual votes, it seems like he's doing okay. But you know, the polls, maybe he's right that they're rigged when Donald says like, oh, it's the media and the polling companies are all conspiring against me.
You know, it's interesting you say that because my mom was telling me a story how a high school friend of hers did early voting in Arkansas. And he put in for Trump and Pence. And then when he went to go submit his ballot, it immediately changed to Clinton. And then then he went to go complain about
it. Is this one of those electronic voting machines?
I'm going to assume, they went to try to redo it again on the electronic machines. And it still did the same thing. And he's just like, oh, well, forget it. And he just kind of walks off.
So he didn't submit it. He was just like, if it's only going to show her, then I'm not going to vote.
I think he submitted it twice, or they redid it again, and that came out with the same thing where he still went for Clinton. So, like, if that's happening to him, how many other people is it happening to?
Well, you know that George Soros funds those machines.
Do what?
You know that George Soros makes the voting machines.
Jeez.
So it's like, you know, they don't exactly contract this out to an impartial mediator.
Yeah, that's got me worried here, because like if that...
Whatever happened to a good old-fashioned paper and pen ballot, that's what they got in Arizona.
I wish we could just do the write-in stuff again in South Carolina, but we don't. And if it happens to me, I will demand to do a write thing.
So you got those voting machines there.
Yeah,
so...
I've always been using a voting machine since like the 2000s, since like I first time voted. As far back as I can remember. But I mean, like,
I know they use the voting machines.
Yeah, they did submit my stuff accurately. So, like, I mean, I don't know if it's because, like, it's Arkansas, so they want to, like, rig it so then, like, it's Clinton getting all the votes.
Yeah. I know in Texas they do have the problems with those machines, too. Because there was, like, I think it was in Austin, maybe they were trying to conspire against Ghost. They all the votes for Trump, there were, like, several people calling into radio stations saying, they tried to vote for Trump and it changed it to Cruz or to Rubio. And it's like during the primaries. Uh-huh. And so it's like, you know, maybe it's just like an error that you get with these machines, but you know, you want to have it so that everybody's ballot is correctly counted. Even, you know, 1% change can flip the election. So it's, you know, it's not fair at all to have this kind of system where they've got all these problems with the voting machines.
Yeah, I mean, like, if this, like, you can't say, like, oh, this has only happened to this one guy. Of course it's not happening to this one person. It's happening to others, and you're saying that too. So, yeah. And if this is how Clinton's going to win, then, like, what's the point of even voting?
Yeah, that's one of the problems is that, like, it's not clear when Trump talks about whether it's rigged against him. It's not clear whether that's going to make people show up and vote and say, like, I got to stick it to the man here, or if they're going to say, well, if it's rigged, why even show up? Because my vote's not going to be counted. You know, so it could depress turnout, or it could make it higher. Or, like, no one really knows because this is, like, uncharted territory here.
Yeah, but yeah, I wish we can go back to paper ballots because those seem to be – you can't change the answer on a paper ballot. Like, it's not it's not like erasable freaking ink or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but even with that, there's problems because, like, you have problems with the database or whatever where they got a list of all who can vote. Like, when I tried to vote in the primary here in Arizona – like, when I showed them my ID, they were like, oh, it doesn't have you as registered. And then I showed them my voter ID, like the little piece of paper that they sent in the mail. And they're like, okay, well, this one worked. And like the other guy was like, well, I'm not sure if we can use this. And the other one was like, oh, that's fine. And it's like, you know, they don't even know what they're doing. They don't know what forms of ID are acceptable. They don't have the database consistent. And it's like, it's all a mess, you know? And they had to recount that election. And it was like at first one candidate was ahead, and then the other one ended up winning by like 10 votes. But like, and when it's that close, you know, a little bit of error in the database, and that can switch it from one side to another. I don't know exactly if my vote got counted or not. And it's like, I was registered, and so I should have been able to vote. I don't know if it was counted or not, because they had all these problems with the database. And there's like a story right that week where the Arizona voter database got hacked into by somebody. They don't know who. Some people think it's the Russians, but nobody knows for sure. You know, people always blame the Russians without knowing or whatever. Yeah, there's so no, it's like it's just a total mess.
It's such a strong assumption that it's the Russians. I mean, it could be. And if it is the Russians, can't they just hack these voting booths so then, like, they freaking work?
So. Yeah. Yeah, I know that the Russians were, like, offering to send, like, election monitors to some of these states. And the U.S. was like, no, we don't want that. So it's like, if they don't want international monitors here, then why did they send international monitors to the elections in the Ukraine? Like, you know, why don't you practice what you preach and have international monitoring here? If people think there's irregularities in one of the campaigns, like Donald is saying, mm-hmm. then maybe it's rigged, you know? Like, shouldn't you want to assure people that this is a properly carried out election? When it could result in violence if it's not properly carried out, because the Trump supporters will get so mad. That they might start rioting.
Yeah,
you don't
want
to steal it and then there to be riots.
Those Trump supporters are already crazy enough. If they get the ballot where it's like, it shows that they voted for Hillary Clinton, like, there's going to be several incidences of voting areas being burnt to the ground. So then nobody can vote. So then they would have to redo recounts or whatever all over again. Man, imagine if it got to that, because it just mix onto how crazy this election has been anyways. It would not surprise
me. I know this guy in Pennsylvania that says, like, he's not even going to vote because of the voting fraud that goes on in Philadelphia. Gosh. Where you see, like, videos of the new Black Panthers, like, standing at the voting patrol. They're patrolling, like, the voting areas and stuff. And it's like, you really think they're going to let everybody in there and impartially vote and it's all going to be counted properly?
Yeah.
They're letting that kind of stuff go on at their voting place. Like, they showed that video on the news and stuff. Like, it's well known what's going on there and that there's fraud going on. And so he's just like, why even bother voting in that case? And it's going to depress turnout if they like continue to allow this to happen. And especially with these videos that just came out this last week, the Project Veritas, where they show like these people being bussed around to various voting places and people have already had to quit over it. And the guy who quit, they've got a tape out just yesterday where it's him saying like these are orders from the top from Hillary, and it's like is this really a fair system when someone who is a criminal is allowed to run for president, is allowed to rig votes, is allowed to rig the polls, is controlling the media and getting the debate questions ahead of time, all this stuff is proven now by the emails, by the leaks, by the videos, and she's still allowed to run, and it's just insane. Like, what were they thinking nominating a criminal instead of Bernie, who was actually more popular? It's just like, who in the right mind thinks that Hillary should be president?
Yeah, I think with, like, if it was Bernie, then the stuff about the sex scandals would never have come up. And obviously, like, Trump would have been, like, would have destroyed Bernie in the debates, like, probably with the
same. But it would have been, a substantive debate, I feel like. If it was with Bernie, like, there would be a discussion of, like, socialism versus capitalism. But with Hillary, it was all just, you said this mean thing about a model 20 years ago, you know? Like, that's the level of the debate.
Cares? Yeah. I mean, I understand that, like, I mean, I think I said this in the chat where it was like, I'd rather have a pig in the office than a rat. A pig is big, makes a lot of noise, and stinks. But at least you know it's there, at least you know what it's doing, and at least you can monitor him better than a rat. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah, I mean, rats move around in the dark, and
they're very stinky, they're made to sneak, so...
They might have poison in them.
Yeah, they might have a gun where they can, or they might have other rats that would kill people by putting 3 bullets in the head and make it look like a suicide. Yeah.
Yeah, like the thing about the
set apartments on fire. That was operating
on her brain tumor a few years ago, and it's like people are saying, you know, maybe she has Parkinson's or something. All these various doctors coming out and saying that kind of thing about her, and then this doctor who knows what's going on in her brain more than anyone else kills himself 2 weeks before the election, and like all these people who knew him said he was like this devout Hindu who loved life and everything, and they're like saying now, like, is this really somebody who would kill himself? And then there's like so many cases of suicides of people who knew them.
Mysterious deaths. And murders and basically their assassinations of their murders. I mean, again, this all goes back to, there's so many websites dedicated to their murder, or like people that have died under their name or under their watch. It goes back to when Clinton was like governor of Arkansas.
Yeah,
and they even like made a documentary on this, like when Bill got in office, and that wasn't even like the body count wasn't as high as it is now.
It's just, probably 2-3 times higher now.
Oh yeah. So,
I mean, you know that someone like Monica Lewinsky or Kathleen Willey or Paula Jones and all the women that he's had these disputes with publicly, they must have, Juanita Broderick, all of them, they must have Linda Tripp, they must all have this immense amount of security around them to not be, you know, they must have to spend a ton of money each year just so for their own personal safety, because they never know what's going to happen to them. Like Kathleen Willey, her cat was killed and they had some goons out in front of her apartment and they said, you're going to be next. Like that's, you know, that's a scary thing to happen to you, you know, like that kind of thing could happen to any one of them. And they, you know, they must have to spend tens of thousands of dollars every year to just make sure that they're not gonna commit suicide unwillingly.
Yeah. Well, I think I was told the story from my one of my new comm teachers. He worked for CBN, a Christian Broadcasting Network, and it was like, you know, back when Clinton was in office, that like apparently there was some people on the news staff or on the CBN staff were in a hotel, and the clerk at the desk called up their rooms and said, you guys need to leave, like, right now. Because, like, somebody from the Clinton family is coming after you guys. And they just, like, just stop whatever you're doing and just leave the room. So, like, they packed up everything. And as they were leaving the hotel, like, a few minutes later, there was, like, all these black vans that showed up at the hotel. And that was, like, it was, like, they freaking knew, like, you know, they did something that they were going to get, like, caught for or accosted for. And
so it's like they were covering the Monica scandal or something.
They might have been, and they probably found something that they shouldn't have, and then they send people after them. So,
yeah, scary stuff.
Yeah, it's I will not shed a tear. I will not shed a tear when the Clintons pass.
People say, like, Donald is a threat to the free press. Well, do you think the press is free right now with the degree that Hillary is manipulating it?
Yeah.
Do you think that we have this great media right now that's really in peril? I mean, it's not like this is some sort of tragedy if he doesn't let the Washington Post or the New York Times into its press pen and they have to be out with the common man in the stands. You know, it's just like the degree of elitism and privilege that the media has. They get all this money from the Clintons to treat them favorably, and they're all in bed with the Clinton Foundation. Like the moderators at the debates and everything, you know, there's like a direct proof that they are involved with the Clinton Foundation, and they're considered to be impartial moderators. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and even at the debates, like, the Clinton's email thing was never dug up deeply.
Yeah, they scratch the surface, they talk about it a couple minutes, and then they move on to saying, like,
move on to Donald's issues.
You call this woman, calling a woman a pig or whatever. You know, it's like, oh, gosh.
Screw it. It's... God bless America. I hope.
Yeah.
I guess what my closing remarks is I'm putting content on a student or college social media website called The Odyssey, or it's theodysseyonline.com. So I did like part one of an article about Gundam fandom in America, released in the West. That's only got like a handful of views because I don't expect a lot of people on the Artifice to be anime fans, but I was like, hey, it was sold to me to write content about whatever I wanted to do. And I was like, well, this is what I want to do. So whatever the view is, fine, I'll take it. So then I'm doing a video series where I'm going to be, as Ghost calls it, I'm one of those YouTubers. I'm not really on YouTube until I put it on there, but I'm doing videos called Anime Drome, because that was the best name I can think of in reference to Videodrome, and that's kind of where I'm coming.
That's a great movie.
No, I love Videodrome. That was a great movie.
Yeah.
So like I just kind of want to do something zany and crazy. So I did like a custom intro and ending. So now like my first video is about motorcycles and anime, which is a panel I've been trying to get approved at cons that I go to, or I like to go to, for over like a year and a half now, and like I keep getting denied or it keeps being on tentative and like forgotten about. Because that was the one I was trying to submit for Anime Week in Atlanta, that they were like, oh, I guess it didn't make it. I'm like, well, you had me on tentative for 6 months and then you never did anything about it. And it's like, if you're an anime con, like this is related to it. I figure the more obscure, the better. And then I just kind of brushed it off and I was like, well, I guess I'll try again next year.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that. I was just like, but now that I have like this video thing, I'm like, well, at least it puts a voice out there. And in terms of my voice, I haven't really thought of how I wanted to do it, but I know what not to do.
And what I will not do. So you made it a motorcycle anime, and you were talking about like, talk about Bakuan or?
No, I haven't even put Bakuan in this. I guess I will eventually.
Yeah, there's like a lot, you know. There's Bakuan.
I'm sorry. I wanted to get into Bakuan so much, but that show sucked.
You had to drop it, didn't you?
Five episodes. I have not looked back since.
You did the five-episode rule of
Yeah, I think the only tangible thing I could take out of there is when she finds Anime Jesus.
Yeah, that and was he talks the about, only memorable thing, huh?
Yeah, that was like the best part of what I saw. So, but... Yeah, so like this one I'm taking from older series, like Angel Cop, and Akira is like the first thing I showed. Because really it's like my stuff's there to like let people know about things they probably wouldn't know about. Especially if they consider themselves, quote, anime fans. And, you know, I have all this knowledge that we throw up on the podcast, so I'm just throwing up even more on a new venue of video.
Yeah.
And, yeah, but the thing I don't want to do is I don't want to be like Bennett and Ben the Sage. Excuse me. God, I threw up in my mouth.
Or, threw the whole ghost there.
Yeah. Oh, days of the...
Ghost with like Devil Man with him. He's got the back changing shape and becoming a demon in some of his episodes.
But no, like I don't want to do that. I don't want to be like the people that came out of that guy with the glasses because they're all terrible.
And, oh yeah, that's so tall.
I mean, honestly, like I liked him in the beginning. I mean, honestly, I think Spoonie's probably one of the best reviewers if you're considering his old stuff. But that dude went downhill. I don't even know what he does now. But
didn't he get banned from the site?
Well, he got fired or let go from that guy like a few years ago.
And yeah, because he wanted to tie up one of the other reviewers in his basement.
Yeah, that was his old girlfriend. No, I think that was Jess Otaku or something, which is not Jess Otaku anymore. It's Jacob Chapman.
Right, the transgender reviewer.
Yep, that's married or about to be married to Zach Bershey from ANN. And they basically run ANN Cast now, and I only listen to ANN Cast if they bring in a guest on, and Jacob is not on it. I'm not discriminating against Jacob because of the surgery. I'm discriminating against Jacob because I've never liked him before when he was a her. There was something just about Jess Otaku I just didn't like as a person. I was like, there's something weird about this person. I can't put my finger on it, but it's one of those things. It's like, I can't watch this person. I don't think they're as great as they think they are. And
to our older views, you know, we've mentioned this before, before they were male, that we weren't a fan of their product.
Yeah, and so honestly, her ditching Nash and going to Zach was probably best in Nash's favor. Because you gotta wonder, Nash now, he's just like, holy crap, I didn't realize she was that crazy to get a sex change. And it's just like, well, I'm just glad that happened. So I gotta assume he's doing very well for himself. But I mean, people do what they want to do, so I guess I can't judge. Oh wait, I can, but there's no law saying I can't or have an opinion on it, so.
But you're never going to do a video about a series and then say, hey, why you can't review it or whatever, like Ben at the Surge.
Yeah, not in their style. I mean, honestly, if I, the thing I want to avoid the most is doing list of stuff. However, I'm willing to bend that rule if I did a list of my top hated YouTube video reviewers of anime. Or better yet, the top five things I can't stand about video reviewers. And just talk about the things that Ben the Sage and Spoonie and all the people from That Guy with the Glasses did. And just somehow take all of them together and then itemize their personalities and how they did reviews, their styles, and just criticize the heck out of it. So, but I would have to feel really driven and therefore maybe drunk to do that.
Yeah, probably best to not get in a fight with those guys.
Yeah, they are more powerful.
Just save it for closing remarks.
Yeah, they are more powerful than I am. I have no room. I mean, I have room to talk, but it's just, and then again, it's just like, no, I really don't. In the spectrum of anime reviewers or whatever, so. And it's like, I'd rather try not to start fights.
Mm-hmm.
But I would love to finish them, but. anyways.
I just saw a tweet saying 6 states so far with voter problems with the voting machines.
Oh, really? Arkansas being one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's nuts that it's happening so widespread, and it's only just the early voting so far.
I'm just showing up November 35th to vote, so Donald Trump told me from SNL.
Yeah.
Those SNL skits are actually pretty good.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty much up with me. I got really nothing else to say on closing remarks.
Yeah, I think we're
other than I'm wearing a wolf mask that has a talking mouth for Halloween.
Oh yeah, you gotta post the picture.
Yeah, my goal is to try to do a Star Wolf thing, or a Wolf O'Donnell from Star Fox, because I've got an eye patch over it, so I'm like, that kind of works.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the only problem is I can't see out of the eye patch, so I'm only looking out of one eye. And I've got to do we're doing a church Halloween thing tomorrow for youth. So I'm planning on dressing up for that and being in the back DJing or running the projector.
Well, that reminds me, I was at the last weekend, the Phoenix Fan Fest.
Yeah, talk about that since you were at a con.
That reminds me is because there was a person at the last booth I went to that was dressed up with one of those big wolf masks that furries wear.
Did the mouth move when it talked?
No, just a big static man, that stuff must get hot, you know? It's not even cooled down yet here in Phoenix. It's still in the 90s. I mean, I can't imagine wearing something that big, that heavy, that furry around a convention for hours every day.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, during that last booth, there was a lot of interesting stuff happening. It was the Ed Robertson comic booth, and he's got a bunch of old comics, very high-grade, expensive stuff, but a lot of interesting stuff to look through. And there's, like, this other guy there that was talking about his collection, and he's got 13 boxes of his stolen by some goons that broke into his garage, and his son woke up and, like, scared them off in the middle of stealing it, but they... this guy had broken in before, and he just stole like a random selection of Justice League comics, but then he came back with some friends to take another go at it. And then this guy had to like go all around town to all the different comic sellers and try to find the stuff.
Uh-huh.
And he's gotten back 6 of the boxes so far. But he was like saying that he had that insured, and he got $3,000 from the insurance company. And he had to like buy them back from these dealers or whatever. They were like, no, I don't know if they're stolen or not. We don't deliberately buy stolen things.
Well, you did.
He had to use his insurance money to do that. But yeah. And like, I guess that this is like a thing that thieves know to look for now because of how much of a bubble the comic books are in. Because usually in the old days, people would probably just think, oh, this isn't worth anything. Not bother to steal it, take the TV instead. But, yeah, and so this guy seemed pretty bothered by it because he was going on about it for quite a while. And anyway, the convention was pretty cool. It was, like, pretty much the same as Phoenix Comic Con, just a little smaller. It says they've been doing it for about 3 years, and I think this is the first year they do it at the Phoenix Convention Center. It was somewhere else before, mm-hmm. but now it's in the same building as the Phoenix Comic Con, just the other half of the year, and... So it had a lot of people dressed up in costumes and stuff as usual, and a lot of it was people trying to sell their artwork and stuff like usual at these cons. And
there was
quite a bit of emphasis on the celebrity guests in the emails, to the extent where I wasn't even sure going in how much there would be in terms of comics, but you know, there were a decent amount of booths selling actual comics. And I didn't see this time any booths selling bootleg DVDs, which I guess that's an improvement over the other convention. Because at Phoenix Comic Con, I always see somebody selling a bunch of bootlegged, like, Kamen Rider and mm-hmm. bootlegged old Marvel movies like Doctor Strange and the bootleg Roger Corman Fantastic Four and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't think I saw any bootleg DVDs or toys this time, so... I guess it does make it seem a little classier when they don't have bootleg stuff on display. Maybe they finally figured out to get rid of that stuff, or maybe that stuff is going to be back at Phoenix Comic Con in the spring. I don't know.
You got the bootleg guy like, you can't keep me down. I'll be back with more stuff.
I mean, that stuff must sell because they were there every year for the past several years. And it's like the stuff is not cheap. And it's obviously bootlegged. Like, you look at the cover, and it's, like, washed out. And it's stuff that never got an official release. And it's, like, he printed the cover off the internet, obviously. He had burned it onto a DVD R. And you can, mm-hmm. like, open it up and see in there. There's no label on it or whatever. It's just, like, an obvious
bootleg. He didn't even go through the extra mile to write in pen with his crappy handwriting, like, Corman Fantastic Four film.
No. But I guess that's the only way you can see that movie. Unless you download it off the internet somewhere.
Yeah.
But you might get in trouble with Sony because they want to protect their unsellable movie that they never released. That they made just to keep the license.
It's like, I see the purpose of like bootlegs, or at least the bootleg market existing, especially if you can't buy, you know, the original source, like, legally. But at the same time, you're, like, supporting people like this, you know, these jerk-offs that do these bootleg stuff. Because they got it from another bootleg, and... You know, they're, it's not there for them to like pass around the movie because they love it. It's there for it's them to make a profit off of it.
Yeah, there was the interesting little part of the Luke Cage show on Netflix where they got the kid that stands on the corner trying to sell a bootleg version of the Avengers. He's like, and during the show, he is like sometimes shows up when Luke's fighting.
Yeah,
he, like he starts filming it, and then he tries to like sell it, and he's like, "I got a bootleg version here of the Luke Cage fights. You got to see it." And it's like Marvel must know that there are bootleg versions of all of their products out there. People are always trying to sell, and I guess that there is like a whole industry of just selling the stuff for slightly cheaper bootleg version. I mean, probably is a big market for that in China and India and stuff.
Oh yeah, I mean the Macross. Do you remember? I mean the Macross. Do you remember Love movie I have? Is obviously clearly a bootleg that you know I bought and re-reviewed, and I bought it from somebody that put a Gmail account on the cover that they're never going to respond back if you email them, and you know that's funding some triad somewhere, but. This is like, I mean, like at the same time, it's like that's the only way I can get Macross Do You Remember Love on DVD. At least that will fit for me instead of downloading it off the internet, and I could burn it on, you know, DVD myself. But, I mean, it's kind of like these, you know, these pirators, like, you know, they put some effort into making it look sort of legit.
Mm-hmm.
They at least sort of try. It's not like, you know, the bootleggers.
Some do.
Yeah. I mean, some it's kind of hard to say, like, you know, it's hard to tell what's bootleg or not, and you have to look for the label specifically to tell.
Because I even easy brought up online to buy one that's a bootleg and not know it, but it's for me it's a little easier in person. Like mm-hmm. you look where the part where it says the region code, and mm-hmm. if it says region all, you know it's a bootleg because official companies yeah. don't make that with region all.
Right.
They only want it to be sold in one market.
Yeah, I mean, like, when I was mentioning, I think, like, years ago when we had Viku on, and I think I went to that South Carolina, like, anime con that only lasted, like, 1 year because it was garbage. And I was like, yeah, I bought some anime OSTs, and, like, one of them came from Ever Anime, and Viku's like, that's a bootleg, you know? I'm like, no, it is? And I'm like, no, damn it! And then I was like, yeah. Crap, that's my initial D Selection 1 that I bought off eBay many years ago. That's got the Ever Anime thing on there, which, by the way, that CD still works to this day.
I remember having a bootleg of Initial D, like my dad got in a garage sale, and it was like a really low-quality DVD.
Yeah, Amazon, like eBay was like at the point where you can buy, I mean, that's how I have all of Freakazoid, but it was bootlegged. Basically, it came from someone's VHS collection. And he put it on DVD, and of course this was like a couple years or a few years before they officially put it out. But I was like, I really want Freakazoid. This guy's selling all of Freakazoid for like $12 on eBay. I know it's not legit, but I want Freakazoid.
Sometimes you get another choice.
And I was like, I'm good with this. And now it's in my brother's collection on like two DVDs.
That's the own fault of the company for not putting it out faster.
Yeah, I mean, I think I remember buying like. An Initial D fourth stage DVD of like some episodes that like just aired. And I think that's with my brother. Yeah, I think it's with my brother now, but they're like crappy subtitles. All I know is I popped that in and then 10 seconds later I took it out. I was like, wow. No wonder this was $2.50 on eBay.
Yeah. I yeah, sometimes you'll see them at like stores and with the regular stuff. And
yeah.
You can tell that they know it's a bootleg because they're selling it for way cheaper. And, like, an example of stores where I bought bootleg anime.
Yeah.
Zia Records, I bought like, Gundam Wing there. It was, like, $5 for the whole series. And they had it at Hastings, which I think has now gone out of business.
Yeah, I went to that Hastings. Texas. Yeah, I went to Hastings in near New Braunfels. That was actually a really cool place. And then I found that they went out of business. I was like, dang. The deal I can get from Hastings if I live near my folks in Texas.
That was like one of the few worthwhile stores in College Station that I would go to on a regular basis. Because that town had nothing going for it. But, you know, they had Hastings, which had like a decent anime rental selection. So I checked out a lot of series there. And, you know, that's like one of the last places that was a chain that had anime rentals or video rentals, period. Because Blockbuster and Hollywood are dead. And it's like, you know, it's just a shame that there's almost nowhere left, and like the local place I went to here I'm sure I mentioned it on many videos, many recordings or whatever.
Yeah.
The Paradise video, that went out of business at the start of this year.
Oh.
So it's like, there are so many of these companies that are going out of business that, you know, you can pretty much only see this stuff online now. But, you know, at Hastings, I had bought like some One Piece bootlegs back in 2006 or 2007 or something, because it was like four kids that skipped a bunch of episodes on the dub and I wanted to see them, and they, you know, there were like bootlegs that had it, but they had like all the names wrong on them, which is one of the funny things when you watch a bootleg sometimes, is that they'll be like from Hong Kong and the names are just totally off the wall. They don't even sound like remotely similar to the actual names. And I don't remember what any of them in particular were, but it was like, you know, Luffy would be something completely different than Luffy, where it's like, how could you even hear it like that? And the grammar is all wrong. And it's like, I guess you get what you pay for when you buy it for real cheap.
Exactly.
You get to see the show and you get the gist of the plot, but you also get a horrible translation.
Luffy D Monday or Loopy D Monday.
Yeah.
I don't know. It can't be as bad as the Pat Labor DVDs I have that are bootlegs that are like, that English on those subtitles are god awful.
Yeah, I remember trying to watch the Gundam original series on DVD because I bought it on eBay and it said it was not a bootleg, but it was, of course. And the same with Dunbine. And it was like, the names were so wrong and the grammar was so bad that I just had to switch to the dub track because it had a sub track, but it was like unusable.
Right. Well, here's the easiest way I was able to spot bootlegs on eBay when it came to Gundam. When it said Victory Gundam or Zeta Gundam on DVD, and it had a box, and the Gundam on the cover was the Strike Gundam from Gundam Seed, you know something is amiss.
Yeah,
I was like, nope, this is not legit, or not even close to what I want to even categorize it as Victory Gundam. Why would I pay you $15 from Singapore?
Yeah.
And now we have it legally in the States with actual Victory Gundam artwork on the cover of the Blu-rays, thanks to Right Stuff. John, I'll tell you what. We've got such a backlog of Gundam, and I want to talk about these Blu-rays eventually and what's on them.
Yes.
We're going to dedicate, or at least I would love to dedicate, our Christmas special talking about these Gundam Blu-rays for Right Stuff. I think that's the best idea.
Yeah, I gotta get my Blu-ray player hooked up and to start checking out that G-Reco, because I have only seen the first two episodes when it was first aired in Japan.
I don't know when I'm gonna, I mean, I only got to like episode 7 or 8 of G-Reco and I just stopped, and then...
We gotta like start it from the beginning again maybe and just watch it one a night or something for November or December.
Yeah, we'll have to do that. I mean, it depends on how busy I'm gonna be because of school, but I think during winter break is the best idea. We can at least get through G-Reco, and we can shove, we can put, because I never saw Build Fighters Beginning, or the Build Fighters Try,
there's two of those.
Yeah, I got, you know, we got the first set, I got, you know, we both got those sets, but I haven't seen Try, so I think it's just like, if we focus on G-Reco, then we can at least get a pretty good review out of that.
Yeah, I've got those to see. I haven't even seen the original Build Fighters, but those have like a dub from Asia.
I think. I have not even popped those in to listen to them yet. I just know CG was just like, can you tell me what the dub actors' voices are in the credits list for me? Since you got that, and I was like, yeah, I'll get on that right away. That was 5 months ago. I haven't done jack. And why would I for CG? But
if you're listening, Right Stuff, we will soon have a Magic Users Club review out for the TV series.
Oh crap, we did that too, didn't we?
Yeah.
I knew we had another recording, I forgot what it was. We also got Fist in the North Star.
Right, that as well.
I think our focus is just to get those two out for November. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, put those out in November, and then in December look forward to a month of Gundam or something. And then with the other shows like Victory and X and the stuff, we can just look at the special features.
Yeah, there's also the Shara's Counterattack Blu-ray, because I wanted to talk about the video quality on that.
Oh, right, yeah.
I didn't think it could be as clear as it can possibly be for Blu-ray. Because people that like have watched it, like Daryl Surratt and Mike Toole that would go on A&M and be like, yeah, it looks fantastic. I'm like, did you guys get a better version than I did? Or are we looking at the same thing? Like, and I honestly feel like, I mean, I already said this like a couple episodes ago, but I feel like Shara's Counterattack Blu-ray was just like the same features as it was on the Sharks Counterattack DVD from like over a decade ago. And, you know, I feel like they just added maybe a couple more things to the Blu-ray that couldn't fit on the original DVD. But it still feels like the same movie. Like, I feel like I want to do like a comparison to like my Laserdisc and my DVD version and the Blu-ray and just see like how they differ. I'm pretty sure the Blu-ray is going to look better, but it just still looked too grainy for me, especially when, you know, I'm watching the Victory Gun on Blu-rays and they're so crystal and sharp. And I'm like, oh, that looks, you know, just amazing. And then I pop in Char's Counterattack and I'm like, well, what is this? That just looks grainy. Just a bright, colorful looking grainy.
About storing a film versus storing a show or something where it makes it more hard to clean up the
masters. Or different masters or something. It could be one of those things. I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not an expert on that sort of aspect of reviewing, of like knowing where the film masters came from, where people will come up with like, oh, this Sailor Moon Blu-ray from Viz must have masters from this year in Japan, and then compare it to this year in Italy and look at how the different masters are and how this could have been better. It's like, you know, I can't really know for certain where they get the masters from because I don't work for the company. So it's really just guesswork and just trying to compare it when you don't necessarily know for certain.
Yeah, you don't have hard,
works.
You don't have hardcore facts. You just have images on the internet, and you're basing your argument off of that and putting it on like the Amazon review page for Sailor Moon Blu-ray Collection 1 or something. I mean, video production's like my field, so like I should know this, but I guess like I'm not as OCD, but like in terms of like comparing those two, it's just like, well, I mean, I can see a difference, so maybe like there's a way why it doesn't look as good as this. And if it's based on masters, and it's like, well, you know, Right Stuff still put out a pretty good release for Char's Counterattack, and I can't really fault them for that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just nice to have that movie back in print after a while, because it's one of the most interesting things from Gundam, even though there are bad things about it, like Quest.
Yeah. I mean, I like to get Blu-ray versions of, like, the OVAs for Gundam, especially Gundam 83. Oh, that's gonna look so... Hopefully it looks... I mean, it's a beautiful-looking DVD, the animation in that, but when it's on Blu-ray, it's going to look fantastic. I'm really hoping. And same with 0080 and 8th MS Team. So you can't really go wrong with those OVAs.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing 0083 because I just saw read the last volumes of the Char's Deleted Affair manga, which were finally put out by the Xeonic... Republic Xeonic Corp vlog. No association with Xeonic Creek here.
Nah, actually, if there was association, I would have probably put out a better translation based on what you read about it.
Right, I was like posting so many of these quotes from them, the manga, where this guy, he put them out like 3 of them in a week, and it was like, okay, great, he finally put them out because it's been years since the last one.
I don't have to touch it for 15 more years, now I can like skydive and do some more stuff on my life and post about why I'm not translating anything, because even though that's why I made this site, but ahead.
From what I've heard, like Viku and Redtail and all the other people who worked with him on the early volumes, they were like demanding that he re-translate the early volumes because the translations were so bad, and then eventually they just left the project because he was so slow and he was getting distracted by the projects, and so these last few volumes were all just just one man jobs. And so there's like no quality checking that he did. And so some of the sentences are like massive run-ons that are very hard to understand. And some of them, he gets like multiple words wrong in one sentence. And there'll be, you know, a typo on practically every page. And so it's like, it's just a really poor translation. But at the same time, I was glad to be able to finally read it. And, if it weren't for this guy, probably no one ever would have translated it.
Yeah.
But what I would really like to see is Vertical to put it out, because they did a poll where they were like, what should we do next after Gundam Origin? It's not clear whether they got enough demand from that poll to put it out or not, but I would think that would be one of the top demanded ones, because it covers that period between the original Gundam and Zeta Gundam that's not very thoroughly covered other than by OVAs. And so it shows like how Haman was able to take over the Axis colony of Zeon, and how Char ended up going to Earth to fight with the Aeyug against the Titans and all these other interesting elements of the UC timeline that were never fully explained before.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody wants to check that out, I would say definitely check it out, but maybe wait for a better release to come about.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm gonna do. I mean, I'm already so far behind on reading Gundam the Origin. I don't know when we're going to do a review of Volume 5, because that sucker came out forever ago. We might as well just skip it, or might as well just do, like, if I ever finish, like, the stuff I got from VQ up to Volume 9, we'll just do a big bulk review of it. Mm-hmm. We'll have to, like, I've been trying to read Volume 5 for 3 years. Like, I can't get around to it.
Yeah, it's
I know it's sad.
You do it when you're done with university or whenever you're ready.
I keep, like, every summer, I'm like, okay, I'm going to read more of this book, and I get through 20 pages at one day, and then I never touch it. It just sits in my backpack. Because then I just have so much going on. Like, I can't even enjoy reading things without it being, like, textbook-related or whatever. I get enough crap about my reading abilities from Dory, since she's a big book person. And she's into collecting books. So that's her thing. That's a great hobby. I'd rather her be the Englisher better person in the relationship. Uh-huh. So... That's perfectly fine with me. I'm not winning any arguments there, so it doesn't bother me one bit. It's probably better for me. I remember reading Char's Deleted Affair, like, gosh, when I lived in North Carolina, so that was like maybe a decade ago was when he first started putting them out. I think that's about right.
Yeah, right.
I remember you guys telling me about it, and I was like, oh, that sounds really cool, and I read, like, a handful of pages, and I was like, oh, this is really awesome. Oh, this is all I got to? Oh, man, that sucks. Well, hopefully it'll come out soon enough. And then nothing happened for years. And then I just stopped caring.
Yeah. I think it was when Aviator and I were watching Gundam in high school, like, you know, almost 10 years ago, probably 2008, 2009. Yeah. I was like a freshman and sophomore in high school, and it was like, you know, we were watching the Mobile Suit and Zeta and Double Zeta and Victory. And it was like, okay, VQ was like, well, you guys ought to check out this, which shows what's happened between Mobile Suit and Zeta, because it's not really clear when you watch Zeta why Haman is in charge of what remains of Zeon. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, okay, this shows what happened. Mm-hmm. And so you read it, and he's got 3 volumes out, and they're 14 volumes. And so, like, over the next years, he finally puts them out sporadically, but... You know, like, when I first read it, I was like, okay, this is interesting and all, but, like, this doesn't even begin to explain the gap of all those years. And then you get to the last volume, and that's, that covers, like, from 0083 to 0087. So there's, like, so much going on in that last volume, and mm-hmm. there's these extra stories at the end with what happened with Rosamia and Imashin before Zeta.
Yeah.
So, and it shows Camille in the last chapter. And just there's a whole lot going on in there, so like it fills in a lot of the gaps of UC. And I would like to see after they animate the rest of the Origin, that last episode that they're going to make of the OVA,
mm-hmm.
you know, do the rest of the series, animate the other volumes with 1 Year War, and then do after that continue on with 0083 to 0087, and do. Do OVAs or a TV show of Char's Deleted Affair, because there's a lot of, you know, a lot of action in there, even though there's also a lot of politics. There are some really good space battles, and, you know, the designs are pretty decent. I mean, I think it would appeal to modern anime fans because you know, they made sure to include a lot of cute girls in it and everything so that it'll appeal to Moe audiences or whatever.
Hey, who did the artwork? Is it Kitazuni who did the artwork for Char's Deleted Affair?
Yeah, I think
okay.
so.
Okay, I thought that looked... Now Zeta that I'm thinking about it, Mike...
Define.
Yeah, Kitazuni was the character designer for some of these Gundam shows, and I'm pretty sure he did the manga for Char's Deleted Affair. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, and he did the Zeta Gundam Define manga, which
continues
right after this, because goes up to the very beginning of Zeta on the last pages, and then that's something that Deacon needs to do, but... I'm not exactly holding my breath. He's probably going to spend a bunch of time on a bunch of Seed and Wing projects, knowing him.
Yeah. It's just better. Also, it's better for Vertical to try to release this and get an official translation and read it for yourself.
Yeah, he's also doing the Bill Plotkin's Children novel, which I have not gotten around to reading yet, but I know that that's like an alternate version of the Charles Counterattack movie, which.
Well, there's also like well, then there's also on. Like Hathaway's Flash, and that's something I would like to definitely check out eventually too.
Yeah,
you know, if anything, like if anything's going to be like animated, it'd be really weird if like the animated like Gundam Sentinel or something, especially as like a side story Gundam, like because that sucker was written back in the 80s by Tomino, and you know all they've done to it is like made model kits out of it and some like maybe some images and. Short manga to it or whatever, but that's about
you
it.
You thought that the Gundam Evolved DVDs would have had some choice relating to it, but it didn't really.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was.
Yeah, but that would be something that they should make. Because, you know, they've done G-Reco just recently, which, you know, I'm involved with, but it didn't really catch on, I guess, but this is, like, more directly of a Gundam series.
Mm-hmm.
Like, with G-Reco, they made the mistake of not putting Gundam in the title. And they just called it Gino Reconquista or whatever for whatever.
And then they wrote a song about it, which is catchy. It's like, Gino Reconquista! Gino Reconquista!
That's the version. Right?
That's the theme song that's in my head. I don't know if it's that accurate,
yeah.
But.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I only saw two episodes with that song.
I made it to 5 or 6, like I said, and I was just like, and I just stopped. I was like, I can't. Do this anymore.
Yeah, but with Tomino still life in his blood, you know, he's gotta produce one more Gundam thing, put out a Sentinel TV show or movie or OVAs or whatever.
Oh,
I know he probably hates that there's so much Gundam and that he hasn't been able to do anything else in a long time. But
I still got I still got his Gundam novels to read. Like I've got the reprint of from Stonebridge Press. I've got the original printings. In America, with the original translations from Fred Schultz.
I think they call it Zion,
those are just in my collection.
Zion.
Yeah.
Like the Israel.
And Char was Shah.
Yeah.
Like SHA or something. I would love to compare and read, but that would require me to pick up a book and spend time reading than just waiting for it to be animated and watch it that way.
Yeah, I got those at the Collector's Marketplace, the original versions, and I haven't gotten around to reading them yet either, yeah. But sometime that's something I gotta do. And I have the movies, on VHS, Mobile Suit kind of movies to watch I've seen the
dub, right? You got the dub one?
Right. Yes. I got the dub one later on and
I'm looking at my copies right now next to my Yamato tapes.
Yes. That's another thing. You cover the Yamato movies. We got a lot of stuff to review, so.
It's amazing that we're 101 episodes in. And we're supposed to be about anime in the past. We haven't even really talked about significant anime to us, like Yamato and the stuff from the 80s. We haven't really gone into Macross or Robotech. It's just, there's a whole...
Have you seen the Yamato movie where they all die?
That sounds like Final Yamato. Actually, interesting enough...
It was the second one. And it's like they wrecked
that's,
after it because it was too sad or something.
Yeah. I've got the second one, which is Farewell to Space Battleship Yamato,
and then
I have the fourth one, which is Be Forever Yamato.
Okay.
It's like
Star Trek, where each one has a title where it seems like it's the last one, but it isn't.
So, interesting enough, John, I picked up a DVD because I got this as research for a research paper I'm doing about anime fandom for my history communications class. I got a lot of information, but I picked this up. It's from Tim Eldred, who does rstarblazers.com, and he did this DVD back like a decade ago, put out by Voyager Entertainment. It's Space Battleship Yamato, The Making of an Anime Legend. It's a documentary about the series that became Star Blazers, which basically he does a documentary about Yamato and Yamato fandom in Japan, mostly focused. It's not really so much about Star Blazers, but it's a lot of the stuff out of his collection and photos and stuff that he has that he's put in there to actually tell a story of, like, how Yamato originally started and going through the process of all the movies, like, how they did. Like, they would do, like, basically, like, the night before release of the movie, they would do, like, an all-night Nippon radio station where they would bring in Nishizaki and the voice actors and would, for 4 hours from 1 to 5 a.m., they would basically do, like, voiceover skits of Yamato and talk about the show and have people call in. Wow. And that's kind of how the Yamato Phantom really started. And it had, like, dedicated people, like, where the Nishizaki would go to, dedicated Yamato, like, fan clubs and conventions that they did strictly for Yamato and talk about things that are coming up or, like, in the next series or whatever.
Do you remember when there was this Gundam manga that was, like, the making of Gundam? It was, I don't remember if it was called Gundam Sosei or something like that.
I think that's...
Did you read that?
I know I've looked at it before, and that was released here.
There was a lot of it where it was like the characters were talking about their other works that they had been working on together in the past.
Yeah.
And it seemed like there was a big relation between Yamato and Gundam.
Yeah.
Where a lot of the animators had come from Yamato, and they made it seem like Yamato was like a real cultural phenomenon like this, where it was like after Gundam took off, they were like saying, well, maybe this is the new Yamato, where it's going to be a big long-running franchise, and there's a huge dedicated cult fandom, and it's like ultimately it's been more popular than Yamato if you look at the long run, the amount of Gundam versus the amount of Yamato.
And anything Nishizaki has done to try to have the same universe, or not really the same universe, but the same feel as Yamato, like Blue Thunder Sub and Odin Photon Space Sailor Starlight, have all been like disasters. And apparently, like, Yamato fans like dread and drag through whenever the name Yamato 2520 is ever mentioned. And that's apparently like a very bad Yamato series, which I actually have. It came out in the 90s, but I know I've got a fan sub of it on my computer, so we'll have to get to that eventually.
All I've seen is like the first season of the Star Blazers dub.
Yeah,
the second movie.
Okay, I rented the first Yamato movie through Netflix when they had the DVD rental thing. And that's like my first thing of knowing that. I rented the live action movie a couple of years ago, and I showed it in front of my a friend of mine for our anime night, which we haven't done in a while. But I liked it. I was like, there's some things about it I like, and they both like fell asleep and like, wow, what's this piece of shit? It wouldn't appeal to them because they don't know anything about Yamato. And this is a Japanese thing where it's like it's only dedicated to the hardcore Yamato fans that want a live-action Yamato movie, yeah. Not for commoner anime geeks and dorks. It's for the hardcore anime nerds like us.
Yeah, if you're daft, you would call them peons or poor people.
Actually, my brother and our friend make more money than me combined, so...
More money than daft.
That too. So daft is the poor one. No, he's not. He lives in New Hampshire. That's status right there. No, that's... You living on the teat of your mom and their house. I cannot complain because that is the situation I'm in there because I'm in college. So.
I think he did say he got a job recently. So.
Yeah, I wish him the best. I really do.
Yeah.
I hope has so much money that he only uses it to roll up his cocaine and snort it through stripper's breast and hooker's breast.
Did you see the stuff Cloud was posting last night on the chat about Jaycoon?
I saw a little bit of it. I think Jaycoon was criticizing him for being anti-Semitic or something, or he was making those comments and people were like following with him.
Yeah, he was accusing Cloud of being a Nazi and a KKK member and stuff. And it's like Cloud is Jewish. No, it's just nonsense. And he was like making these unsubstantiated claims like about Cloud being a child pornographer. It's like he's just completely made it out of thin air. It's like, how does he come up with this stuff?
Yeah, I don't think you'll ever hear the term Jewish Nazi fan or Jewish Nazi supporter. You'll never, except for this broadcast because I made up the term. But in terms of that being actually used outside of this audio recording, it should never ever be said or heard because there's no way that could happen.
Yeah, it's just made up at a whole cloth. Like the whole thing of his is he claims Cloud ruined his life. People might have heard us mention this guy before. There's this guy that in high school is claiming he's going to do Columbine 2.0. And Daft and I, along with Chalmers, reported him to the high school. And then he blames Cloud for it.
Cloud had no involvement in this. I didn't even know any of this happened until like a couple of days after it did. And this is before we started the podcast. Or
there were
original
only a few
Cool
people
Kids Club.
Who knew.
Yeah.
And it was like, just when Daft, Chalmers, and I were on, like the previous day, Cloud had told us about these posts, And then later on, we were discussing it, and McCloud was not there. And we decided, well, we got to do something, and we got to stop this guy, and then we reported it. And then he comes on later that day, and he's like, this must have been the work of Viku, TY, and Cloud. And it's like, none of those people were on. And it's like, then he just eventually dropped Viku and TY, and he's just a monomaniacally obsessed with Cloud, and he says, you're the only sociopath in existence, the only truly evil person on this earth. Anyone who knows Cloud knows he is anything but. He is the most calm, level-headed guy. Like, you see his reaction to his father dying recently. You know, he's like, he seems like he's in control, and he's able to handle stress very well. Like, he's got all these people coming at him, you know, for, like, this Jaehoon coming at him for no reason. And he's able to put up with it even under all the stress that he's under, having to hold down the family alone now with his sister. And
I've never seen a sociopath like Jacob claims.
He's a nice guy.
We've never seen Cloud get like obsessively upset in our chat room. Like I got a short fuse on certain things. You know, I'm like kind of sort of remotely ticked off. When, like, I type in big caps or, like, I have certain things I do say to get my point across.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm more vocal about it, but he's not. He's, like, the most passful person on our chat, and I like that about him. We kind of need that.
Yeah. He's, like, mildly snarky sometimes. We're supposed to
That's true. That's the worst. Him being mildly sarcastic or snarky is, like, the worst he can do.
Yeah.
He is a saint compared to me.
I mean, this is the guy who the first few years in the chats, he would not even swear. He would, like, put
an asterisk. He still does that from, like, or, like, just kind of abbreviates it. And, like, for me, I do it, and I'm like, I shouldn't have said that. And I try going back and deleting it or editing it. And then, or at the same time, I'm like, ah, it's been said too late, whatever. I'll just make sure never have to do that again. And then it's like, Hillary, that dumb bee did what?
But anyway, I guess we covered a lot here in closing remarks.
Yeah, we've been on more closing remarks than we did the Devilman review. I even forgot, like,
probably two times as much on the closing remarks as the movie.
Let's see, we basically covered politics, school stuff, Gundam, chat drama, love that Goku. That's about it.
Yeah, a little bit on the Niv thing, I guess we could talk about, since we mentioned in passing that he was banned.
We mentioned that in the last episode, I thought.
It was like ongoing. Like that was, that was his last outburst.
Yeah.
We talked about it.
That's right. Because like the stuff he said that night, on our episode 100 that we were repeating to Jeff, and Jeff was like, who is this guy? Why are you talking to him? So So then the next day I'm at school and I've kind of like, okay, we need to do like a 3 strikes policy against him. Like, at least to warn him of his behavior, we're not putting up with it. And, like, his behavior is more annoying than all of ours combined, apparently. Because we get on each other's nerves on this chat room. And we still talk to each other. And so then you started kind of going through it, and I was like, my thing was, like, we need to put this to a vote, at least. Uh-huh. And you're just like, okay, I'm counting it. You know, I see 3 strikes. F it. And you just cross him out. And for me, I was like, well, the damage is done. What can you do?
I mean, the thing is, I felt like that was going to go like, well, this is only a half strike, and this is that.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no foolproof, and it's like, I don't want to drag it out forever.
No, yeah.
I just don't want him in here anymore.
My thing was like, it's either a full strike or it's not. We're not doing half strikes. We're not fractioning it down to a percentage. It's like, you did the right thing. And then,
I mean, I was responsible for getting him in there to begin with, and I felt like it was up to me to get rid of him because he's on after
trouble. I wanted to at least be sort of democratic about it and be fair in a way, but I was like, nah, I think if we talk to him again, he's still going to be like, you know, you're wrong and I'm right. I'm not doing anything wrong. Okay, well, I'm not putting up with that anymore.
I mean, we tried to talk to the guy civilly.
Several times. I've got my point across with him. And then
we told him about the strikes, and he just threw a fit about it and said he was going to leave the chat.
Okay, fine.
He was like, okay, if you're gone, then I'm just going to make sure you don't come back.
Yep, and that's exactly what happened. And then that evening, Viku got pissed at us because it's like, he thought this 3 strikes thing was universal across everyone. It's like, well, how many strikes do I have? I'm like, none.
Zero.
We're not doing it to you. We're singling out Niv because of how he's been acting. It was directly to him. And then he starts like, you're going to be like Samantha and Curry and Tony and how they used to rule the chats, and I'll support this abuse of power. It's like...
He said, like, I have a problem with authority, I think he said.
I think that's his problem. Okay, well, I'm going to bite my tongue on that because I'm about to say, well, that's kind of his problem in life is that he doesn't have he's got a problem with authority. Anyways, that's not my judgment. Job. Yeah, because he can't bow down. Yeah. Anyways, that's all I'm going to say. But yeah, it's like, dude, you're not in trouble. You're like, the thought of me like kicking you from the chat works like this. We've had tuffles before, or basically he said things and acted like a jackass. I've called him out on him, and he'll either rage off or do whatever. And then I go to bed pissed, wake up, feel really bad, and just be like, hey man, I'm sorry. And then we're cool. And it like goes the same way.
This guy for like 10 years.
Yeah, I've known him before. I've known Viku online longer than I've known you guys by like a year or so. And he wasn't like this before. At least I didn't think so. But
he's definitely got more bitter.
Yeah, I think that's part of age and his life. But that's another story. But yeah, like he's not in trouble for anything. I'm like. You're upset because we did the right thing, but it's how we did it is why you're pissed off, and you think we're going to do that to you. And like, I'm like, no. Even the other night when I was like kind of intoxicated, like I told him, I was like, look, dude, I know we got some issues. Well, maybe I can – I'm not going to read this verbatim if I find it. Oh, well, apparently it's not even in the archive anymore because I PM'd him one – Yeah, I PM'd him a couple weeks ago, and I was just like, hey, man, I know you get on my nerves and piss me off, but, like, I really like you. I don't mind you. And okay. I think that's when we're talking about Niv for the first time or something.
Oh. And, I know he was PMing Daft about it as well. He didn't talk to me about it. Maybe
about what I said to him?
Well, I just know that Daft said, like, he was talking to Viku, and Viku kept saying, I don't like how seriously you guys are taking things lately in the chance. And it's like he was really the only one taking the new thing seriously. Like,
yeah. You know,
I kind of had a good time getting rid of it, to be honest. I don't want to say the other stuff that we did, but
I mean the thing is it's just our personalities clashing and feathers ruffling, and you know, once we get past that we're actually pretty cool. And that's just kind of how our community operates and has been for over a decade at this point, which is amazing.
Not always going to be a perfect unison.
Oh, it's no. I said it like a week ago or a few days ago. I was like, holy crap, we're a living Eltingville club. And Daff is like, yeah, you're right. I'm like, I know, because we're the most bitter people we know. Like, we go on there and just start ranting about everything, and like we act like we hate everything, and that may be about half right. And maybe that's probably growing on me too, but you know, at the same time, it's just like we rant about things that no one else cares about outside of us, and that's kind of like our own little collective, and it just needs to stay in that bubble. Oh, holy crap, 2 hours and 13 minutes this recording's been going on for.
Yeah,
this is the extended episode 101 closing remarks. I don't know if we're gonna get another longer episode than this, so not for a while at least. Probably not till Christmas.
The Gundam one.
Yeah, the Gundam one, I think that might go on for like 5 hours or something. We'll just bitter about everything wrong with Gundam that we've said about 100,000 times at this point that everyone else knows about.
Try to surpass our 6 hour episode.
That's not a contest. John, that's not a contest. No, the ultimate surpassing is the episode that's never been released that I own. Is the 24-hour podcast troll thing I did for Toon Radio like 2 years ago.
Oh, right. Where it's like a bunch of Dragon Ball Z toy commercials.
Yeah, and Australian movie trailer clips that I found on the internet and put it in with white noise. That lasted exactly 24 hours. And no one will ever know about that.
Other than the Toon Radio listeners.
Yeah.
Which would be, like, you and Mason.
I haven't listened to Toon Radio forever. Like, you guys are just like, Mason, what episode are you playing? And I'm like, he'll figure it out. And I just forget.
It hasn't been up in months.
Well, yeah, it hasn't been up in months for recently. And then it's going to come up for about a month.
or a week.
Yeah. For an hour. For about 5 minutes.
He brought the website back, but he doesn't have a streaming service.
I think that was the last thing he was looking for.
Yeah. So there's no way that he can stream because his computer died. And he said he recovered everything except the Cool Kids Club episodes. Like, he made a proactive point of not bothering to rescue the Cool Kids Club episodes.
It's like it's a sinking ship. And he's only throwing over, or I guess he's trying to keep the ship afloat, and the Cool Kids Club is the most heavy burden that he has. Now, I mean, I've got a couple, it's funny because I've only got a handful of Cool Kids Club episodes that I've kept.
Well, they're on archive.org, aren't they?
Part of them are, and the others are stuff that I never bothered to re-upload, or I still gotta find.
Yeah, there's some that are lost to the void, tragically, like the one with Toothless talking about 9/11 was an inside job.
Never even heard that episode. I remember, you guys had the first couple episodes, and I remember, I wanted to listen to them. And I tried, and they were bad. They were so bad.
Oh, they're real bad. All the stuff before the Ava and Gundam Unicorn reviews are just trash.
Quality improved when I showed up, but Viku would give a different story on that.
Yeah, I would say you ruined it by making it more serious in this actual podcast.
Yeah, how dare me try hard at something that was intended as a joke.
Yeah, and you look at this episode, how much of this is us talking about Devil Man? It's not like this is 100% on top of a serious podcast.
I mean, we talked about, it was related for about the first hour. That's the only pain I want to put in people. And the rest of it is just closing remarks, which is a given for the show. I mean, people are welcome to tune out. But
you don't have to listen to the whole thing if you don't want to. But
well, I would like you to listen to the whole thing because I like to hear your opinions on our political views and how wrong we are. And you're probably listeners. I want you to tell me that Vermin Supreme 2016 is the way to be.
We've never gotten any backlash over that stuff that we say at the end, which is shocking. Because stuff that will surely piss off some people.
Yeah, I keep thinking someone's going to listen and just I'm mad, and therefore I have to continue to listen. At least we know we got a listener. Strong one.
Get a hate fan base.
Yeah. I always check the internet to see if we have one, or at least somebody saying our podcast sucks, but none of that exists. Showing not that many people listen, so.
Once we get big, we'll get the haters.
Yeah. I was hoping we get big since we hit episode 100. That just shows how diligent we are.
That may be true, that once you get 3 digits,
we'll be taking more seriously now.
Maybe.
I just keep thinking we're going to be a sleeper podcast. It's the next renaissance of podcasting comes up when our name shows up, and then everyone's these people said this 5 years ago. I'm yeah, that's something I would say. I wouldn't deny it. All right. We got to shut this down.
Okay.
So this has been a great Halloween episode. Next year we're definitely going to... Oh, I do want to tell you that I'm getting a Zeon flag in the mail in the next couple of days. From somebody I know online. He's getting rid of some stuff. And actually, I can post you a link to that. There's a guy out of Atlanta that's getting rid of stuff, and one of the images was a Zeon flag. And I was I want that so bad. So that's going to be posted proudly in my room. And the fact that I got Initial D version 3 from my arcade machine from some people from California that I think I felt I overpaid for. Just a little bit. But if I sell some things to compensate the loss, then it's not too bad. So that's what I'm currently working on. And I went out there and tried it out today where I took out the old security key and popped in the new one for version 3 and opened up the GD-ROM disk thing and then slapped the game in, and it booted up fine and it ran great. So no problems there.
That's nice.
Yep. I just need to get a card reader now and then I'll be set. And if I can get a second version 3, then I can hook up to the other machine, and then we can just, I can have connectivity there.
Yeah.
Yep. Alright. So, I'll go ahead and shut this down.
Okay. Go ahead.
Later.